Marianne, did you read this? Marianne, did you read this?
No.
Well, that's the thing, and we'd have to take it over, I guess.
Thank you.
He hasn't closed it off yet. What do we have on the agenda first? Are the scouts out?
He must live right up the street.
Behind us.
Boy. Yeah, the helicopter out there.
That's what you get for living so close.
Oh, man.
Chilly in here.
Is it green hat?
I feel better now.
Oh, jeez.
He gave it to you?
Yeah. We both are going to do the...
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
The South Sanitary is set up.
Pismo Beach City Council is now in session. It's a regular meeting, and today is Tuesday, September the 7th. And would the city clerk please read the roll call?
Yes, Mayor Crescioni.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Reese.
Here.
Councilmember Natoli.
Here.
Councilmember Gonzalez G.
Here.
Councilmember Ravenal.
Here.
Thank you.
Before we proceed, could the city attorney please give a account of the closed session that we just had.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The City Council met in closed session pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9 to discuss with its attorney threatened litigation in one matter. There was no reportable action taken.
Thank you. Invocation will be given to us by Dr. Paul Jones, retired, please.
Would you bow your heart with me, please? Our Heavenly Father, history teaches each of us that when the Capitol building was built in Washington, D.C., the designers were well aware of the dependence of the members of Congress upon God and prayer. The 83rd Congress designated a room near the rotunda that is always open for private prayer and meditation for the members of Congress whenever Congress is in session. This prayer chapel stands as a witness to the need for prayer by our nation's leaders. The focal point of the room is a stained glass window that depicts General George Washington kneeling in prayer, and surrounding him are the words found in Holy Scripture in Psalm 16, "Preserve me, O God, for in you do I put my trust." We elected our friends, the mayor, and his colleagues to our city council to serve us. And now, in obedience to Holy Scripture, we support them and we undergird their support staff with our prayers. We pray for them corporately tonight as we have prayed for each of them today by name in our personal prayers. And we understand that good government is a principle that originated in the heart of God. So cause each of our council members to sense the power of your invisible presence tonight. We would invoke your divine wisdom and courage to be given to each of them to make good and right decisions. and grant that each decision will honor God and be for the betterment of all of the citizens of Pismo Beach and the guests who visit our beautiful city. We thank you for hearing and responding to our prayer. This invocation we pray in the name of our personal Savior and Lord. Amen.
Thank you very much. This evening we're truly pleased to see the Weeblos coming over to assist us in saying the Pledge of Allegiance. Could the leader please come forward?
Oh, actually, we're going to have this little leader tonight.
Okay, great. Could you get us started, please? Face the flag.
Okay. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. Salute. Pledge. I pledge of allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Two.
Thank you very, very much. This is our future leaders here. Thank you. Item number 1A is a proclamation. Mr. City Manager.
Mr. Mayor and Council, item 1A is a proclamation of the City Council declaring September 11, 2004, Patriot Day, a day of remembrance.
Your mic is...
A day of I'm sorry. Let me start over. Mr. Mayor and Council, item 1A is a presentation. It's a proclamation of the City Council of the City of Pismo Beach declaring September 11, 2004, Patriot Day, a day of remembrance of September 11, 2001, and both the victims and heroes of that day.
Proclamation, Patriots Day, a day of remembrance. Whereas our nation was brutally attacked on September 11, 2001, in an unprovoked and senseless act of terrorism. Four civilian aircraft were hijacked and crashed in New York City, Pennsylvania, and the Pentagon, and...
Whereas innocent United States citizens of all heritages, as well as visiting citizens of foreign nations, were killed and injured as a result of these horrific acts, and
our brave servicemen and women who have fought to protect our nation, and
whereas the residents of the city of Pismo Beach are asked to lower flags at half-staff from sunrise until sunset, honor those who lost their lives, and celebrate the heroes, pray for peace and our victory in the global war of terrorism, drive with headlights on.
Now, therefore, I, Benito J. Crescioni, Mayor of the City of Pismo Beach, along with the Pismo Beach City Council, do hereby proclaim September the 11th, 2004, as Patriot Day. On a day of remembrance in the City of Pismo Beach, and urge all residents to recognize the heroic efforts for the safety of our nation and order all flags the City of Pismo Beach to be displayed at half staff from sunrise until sunset on September the 11th in accordance with the proclamation of the President of the United States. In witness thereof, we have hereon to set our hands and cause the official seal of the City of Pismo Beach to be affixed this 7th day of September 2004, and all five council people have signed it, and it is with great honor that I present this to the people that will be the first responders if anything happens to us, and they're the guys that protect us.
Thank you. I'd just like to folks to remember that it was not just the police and firefighters in New York City on September 11th, but also government workers, staff workers, and a whole bunch of unsung heroes, which are common citizens, that all came together as true American patriots that day. Hopefully, we'll never have to do that again.
And if I might add to what Chief Cortez said, there was several civilian and military personnel that were killed, both at the Pentagon and since that day. True American heroes. All of Americans are patriots. All Americans are heroes in this event, but we should pay special homage to those that have given their lives so that we might be able to stand here today and feel safe and comfortable in our own homes.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. Item 1B, please.
Mr. Mayor and Council, item 1B is a briefing by Mr. David Mullinax, who represents the League of California Cities on the Central Coast, and that's the counties of San Luis Obispo, Ventura, and Santa Barbara counties. He's going to give us a short presentation on the Proposition 1B and the protection of local government revenues. Dave?
1A.
Thank you, and thank you, Honorable Mayor and Council members. And yes, that's right, it's 1A, Prop 1A. I just wanted to come by. I know this city and this council was very supportive with our Prop 65 efforts, and all this is kind of the culmination of a 15-year battle between local governments and the state. From now on, put it in the Constitution that they could only borrow money in the future and would have to repay that money after 3 years' time with interest as well. So what we have done is we qualified an initiative back in April. We gathered 1.3 million signatures around the state. Pismo Beach was very involved and engaged in that effort. And what happened was the governor then said, hey, I would like to talk with you guys and make a deal. And we negotiated with the governor for about a month or longer, actually. It actually made the budget process go a little longer than was planned for. And what we did is we agreed to compromise with Proposition 1A. The governor is behind it. He is one of our co-chairs to it. Part of the packet I've given you is a little fact sheet, and I'll leave some fact sheets on the table back here for any audience members that would care to inform themselves on this issue. That Prop 1A will be one of 16 statewide initiatives on the ballot in November. Now, we are the only one that is the smaller number, 1A. The rest of them go from 60 to 75, I believe, something like that, or 59 to 74, something like that. We have Prop 1A. And as you can also see on our coalition list, we are supported by public safety groups, police and fire, emergency services, business groups, labor groups, Republicans, Democrats, state legislators, local leaders, all across the board. 3 weeks ago, the Public Policy Institute of California, a very well-respected public policy group that does a lot of polling on quality of life issues, did a survey that included the Prop 1A measure, and it showed that we do have about 60% support as of today. But I would caution any false confidence or relaxation of the efforts that are going to be required, because there's still a lot of people that aren't quite sure of what Prop A is, what it does, and what the impacts are. So what that means is we do have to run a campaign over the last 56 days. The campaign will be activities will include things like coalition building. I'm seeking support of all the cities in the Tri-County area, chambers of commerces, public safety groups, business and labor groups, local officials as well. What we also have to do is reach out to the media to make sure they are getting our message, making sure your community understands what Prop 1A does, and we'll also be having to raise a lot of money because this is a campaign activities. We cannot use public funds. The city of Pismo Beach cannot give to this campaign, and we have to solicit those funds privately. And so we'll be doing a selection or a collection of fundraising activities. Councilman Natoli is our division director, our League of Board director for this Tri-County area, and will be coordinating some of those activities as well. So again, what we're going to have to be doing in the last 56 days is making sure everybody's up and running, engaged in the process, and making sure that we are addressing those issues and doing all those.
I applaud your efforts, so thank you.
Thank you. And one thing I would just address to that, the Prop 1A is a compromise. We probably got about 85% to 90% of what we were seeking. What Prop 1A does give, though, is the governor was going to go neutral with Prop 65. He is fully behind us with Prop 1A. He's going to be involved with three campaigns, the initiative campaigns. He's opposing the two gaming initiatives, and he's supporting this initiative. And that was a very big part of the negotiations.
Well, thank you very much. I'm sure that you will be telling us a lot more, and we will be making the rounds so as to discuss this issue.
Thank you, and okay. Good to see everybody again. Look forward to working with everybody.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you.
Okay. The next portion of the agenda has to do with the public having an opportunity to address the council. Now, bear in mind the fact that this is a meeting of the City Council in public. This is an opportunity for the public to talk to us. The items that you should be discussing are items that are not a part of this agenda. Now, if you notice, this is a very, very big audience, and there's a lot of people that would like to speak to us. So we are, in fact, going to adhere very closely to the three-minute limit, and so we will give you an opportunity to speak on any subject for 3 minutes, and when the 3 minutes are up, I will cut you off. Okay, so please don't think that I'm being nasty. All right?
You are.
But I am. But because we do want to go home tonight before 2 o'clock. Okay? So I have a series of cards here of individuals that would like to address us on this at this section of the agenda. And so therefore, I will call the person, and hopefully you'll be able to adhere to the 3 minutes so that I don't have to cut you off. Okay? And the first card here is Larry Pearson.
Mayor, council members, my name is Larry Persons, representing Los Robles del Mar, Pacific Harbor Homes, 3738 Foothill Boulevard. In February, our project was in front of you for approval. And in fact, on February 17th, by resolution, the council adopted, certified the EIR and adopted the CEQA hearing. They approved the general plan amendments. They approved the fiscal impact report, and they approved our tentative map, specific plan, and development agreement. At the March hearing, March 2nd hearing, we came back to discuss the development agreement and the pre-zoning. After much deliberation, the council went into its discussion round and asked us to go out and acquire more information on the water issue, which didn't relate to the development agreement or pre-zone, but was some information that they wanted. So we agreed to do that, and in the spring of this year, we conducted a long-term test of the wells that are out on our property. Since that point, we've been trying to get that information back to the council, and to date, we have been unable. And so what I would like to do at this point is request, pursuant to your instructions on the public comment period, to place our matter back on your September 21st agenda so that we may bring to you the information from the results of our well tests and traffic measures so that you can consider our development agreement and pre-zoning ordinance and direct staff to prepare a resolution for LAFCO annexation. I'm not here to debate any of those issues tonight, only to request that you put that on the agenda so we may bring that information to you and have a hearing on that issue. That's all I have.
Thank you very much. Michael Titus. Okay. So I'm not quite sure that I know what you mean by next speaker because I've got the cards here.
I assume Lance Tolan would be after me. That's why I said that. My name is Mike Titus. I'm an attorney at Jackson's Markham Peckinpah. I'm here on behalf of Los Robles Del Mar. I was here in case you had any questions as to what resolutions needed to come back for a hearing. We request that the City Council place the consideration of the development agreement and the pre-zoning ordinance on the September 21st hearing date. Concurrently, also have a resolution prepared for a request for annexation. Whether we win, lose, or draw, we've paid our fees, we've submitted all the information, we just like to have a hearing. And I think I'll pass it off to Lance. Thank you.
Okay. I see what you mean. I finally found the other card that you wanted to speak after. Okay. Lance?
My name is Lance Tuss. I represent the school portion of the Los Robles Del Mar annexation. I guess I look at this in two ways. One is just by observation. As I watch Mr. Person's work, he continually answers questions put before him. He works with integrity. He works with information. And again, at this time, I would just ask that staff be allowed to come before you, and Mr. Persons be allowed to present his information again, the information that you asked him to get, based on what was, again, what was directly asked of him to present his findings. I would ask that the council would continue with what was acted upon back in February, and that hopefully soon we would see this whole matter resolved. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. A Pat McLean? Yes. Yeah. Okay. Pat.
Hi, I'm Pat McCaslin. I'm Cub Master of PAC 73, and I want to thank you for allowing our Weebelows One Den to lead you in the pledge. I wanted to give a little information because we are a PISMO-based PAC. We meet over at the Lions Club in Pismo Beach at 202 Addy, and we are always looking for young men who want to become Cub Scouts and Weebelows. They are from ages from 6 to 10, or first grade to fifth grade. And we meet on Wednesday nights from 6:30 to 7:30, and boys and their parents are welcome to come over and check us out. And I would like to introduce my two Weebelows Den leaders. I have here David Damon, and Madeline Simonaro. And I just wanted to give David a chance to come up and talk about one of our little fundraisers, if I can. And then Madeline will introduce the boys.
Just a real quick one. We're trying to we've been growing this pack now for a couple of years. It's really taking off. And so we're starting an annual, thanks to the Lions Club, a spaghetti feed that's going to be September 18th. So we'll probably leave some flyers back here that if anybody wants to contact the Cub Master or us that can possibly come. This is for takeout or for sit-down dining at the Lions Club on September 18th, $6 for adults, $4 for children. And it will help fund our whole year for all of our camping activities, et cetera, et cetera. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Madeline.
I just wanted to introduce my Weebelow One Den here. Could you please stand? This is James Seminero, Eric Johnson, Kyle Damon, Tyler Walsh. And thank you very much for having us.
It's our pleasure. Thank you so much for watching.
Sorry, I just wanted
one more thing. This is actually a requirement of the Scouts, is that they come as far as their citizenship. The Weeblos now are on a path of about 8 specific different programs, you know, handyman, journeyman, outdoorsman, and citizenship. And this is part of their program to learn what you do and to become the leaders of tomorrow. So thank you.
Wonderful. We're very, very, very happy to assist you. All right. Thank you. Okay. Let's continue on with Jay Chappell. Come on, Jay.
Jay Chappell, 164 Baker, Shell Beach. It seems our little community of St. Andrews is under attack again. Years ago, we had neighbors move in, and they didn't like the way their view was blocked by the city trees, so they proceeded to cut them down. We have new neighbors now that are building a home, and they want to shut off an access pass that's been used for 40 years by our neighborhood. They didn't ask any questions. They just put the gate open. I'm here to personally commit that that pass will be, it was approved by the Coastal Commission, by the way, and that access path will be kept open. And if they put one up in the interim, it'll be torn down. Thank you.
Jay's quite a guy. Okay. How about Mike?
Chappell?
Yeah, well, we will get a little bit more information on that.
Okay.
Okay. Mike? Mike Hahn? Where's Mike? Oh, there. Come on, wake up, Mike. Michael.
Mike Hahn, Ford's 37 Ocean View Council. I have come up in front of the council on the height limit of trees, and I was thinking that one way the city could possibly help people who would either take down their tree completely or take it down to the height limit, since the city has a wood chipper, if the people would possibly lay their tree clippings out front, as long as they're willing to take down the tree quite a ways, if the city would possibly pick up and chip their pieces of wood. And second, the second council meeting of the month is kind of hard to meet for a lot of people. I was wondering if possibly you'd think of moving it back to 6:30. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Okay, Aaron Downs. Aaron? And Effie McDermott will be next.
Aaron Downs, 700 Lemoore. I've noticed that council's been reconsidering some things that once seemed like a really great idea until they just didn't seem to work, kind of like term limits or looking at the Planning Commission having to always do just the architectural review. And with that in mind, I'd like for the council to really reconsider having staff have an ability to make minor exceptions. As an example, I'm going to tell you about a property in Pismo Beach that's almost under the freeway. The whole house is about 200 square feet. It doesn't have a bedroom. It was allowed to have a permit to remodel the bathroom and the kitchen, but to go in and add and just enclose this deck, it will take having flow calculations that are $3,000. I mean, it's going to have to underground the utilities. This is on a lot that's only like 15 feet wide. There are exceptions to almost every rule. And I think that if staff, there's not even an ability to get before anybody without spending more money than the remodel would cost. So young people and senior citizens are left without an ability to improve their property. I mean, virtually, it's impossible. Thanks.
Thank you. Effie? And Tony Spinelli will be next.
Hi, my name is Effie McDermott, Honorable Mayor, members of the council. I'd like to bring to your attention a matter down on the Addy Street estuary, where we are having the good fortune of hundreds of pelicans feeding daily in that area. We have quite an increase in pelican population in our city. We're all enjoying them. However, when they pull up and pull out of the estuary and they circle, they hit the high-voltage lines on Addy Street. Now, a few years back, PG&E put some objects. I don't know what they were, but they hung something from the lines so that the pelicans would see them, and the carnage ceased. However, those things are gone now, and I called PG&E this week after finding out from the police dispatcher, after when I reported another pelican down, found out there had been three in the last 2 weeks electrocuted or harmed seriously. PG&E says that the city must request and pay for this little modification to the lines. So I thought I would let you know that.
That's nice. We have the deep pocket, I suppose. And after Tony will be Don Day.
Good evening, Honorable Mayor, members of Council, Tony Spinelli. Couple things. Being that we got through with the modifications downtown, which I see we have a notice of completion on the agenda tonight. Thank you very much. I would like to bring to everybody's attention that we were discussing the opening of Addy Street Bridge for one-way traffic going out. I would like to see us pursue that, being that it's the next step in the rung of the ladder. And also, I would like to find out, at your discretion, what's happening with the piece of property that's adjacent to the 7-Eleven. I know we're going through permit process with Caltrans. Maybe if we stuck Don Day on that thing, we could get it done a lot more expediently. Thank you. Also, I'd like to pull 4G, if I may. Thank you.
4G. Okay, Don.
Don Day, 101 Park Place, Pismo Beach. Mr. Mayor, members of the council, my wife said no more work. And I would like to thank Trace Burton with Pappage Construction. He was someone that I overlooked, unfortunately, and he was the superintendent that was running the bathroom placement for the contractor at that portion of our work. And I inadvertently neglected to mention him. And I would like to have 4-H and 4-I pulled from the consent, please. Thank you.
4-H and 4-I. Okay. David Baumgarten.
Aye. You're on. Mr. Mayor and council members, when I heard the celebration, or I should say the honoring of September 11th, I thought of this Fiddler in the Roof song. Sunrise, sunset, quickly flow the days. And I thought, I got a brochure in the mail the other day from PCPA, a wonderful theater company in Santa Maria. And next year they're going to do the musical Brigadoon, which is about a town that appears and disappears every 100 years. Now, Pismo is not that town. But we've been working now for a year, hopefully, to come back to Pismo. And we have a TV show called Plot 2004, The Return to Pismo. And we have now 9 episodes of that. And I'd like to have it aired on Channel 20 also. And you people apparently have to approve that and agendize or give us permission to do that with the government AGP who does the government TV. And so I very much like to air those episodes on that channel, if you'll give us permission. And then I'll close by singing another song from Brigadoon. Come to me, bend to me, kiss me good day, give me your lips and don't take them away. Come to me, bend to me, kiss me good day, give me your lips and don't take them away, and don't disappear on us. Thank you.
Could Could the city manager please make note of that comment and have it? Okay. Mark Schmidt? Now, is this for the item on agenda?
It is.
Oh, okay. Then we'll
it's not time.
Talk about this later.
Okay.
All right. Sorry. I just realized what it was. All right. Sally Kren? And then next would be Art Anthony.
Okay, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. My name is Sally Kren, and I live at 158 Baker Avenue in the St. Andrews development. I've lived there for over 20 years, and I work professionally with Linda Laughlin, who's the Coastal Access Program Manager for the Coastal Commission. And she encouraged me to raise the questions along with certain residents of the St. Andrews developments who are in full force here tonight in the back two rows. They were questioning the legalities of a closure of a coastal access trail that's been in existence since 1960. It's provided access to the coastal bluff for over 40 years. The locals know it as Angel's Alley. This trail is also noted in the 2003 Coastal Commission's Coastal Access Guide. It states the following for coastal access, and I have a pamphlet here I'll give you with photographs of the trail and the closure of the trail. Additional access to bluffs from the pathway at the northwest corner of Seacliff Drive, private property on either side of the path, do not trespass. And certain residents of St. Andrews have been doing this for, as I said, for over 40 years. On September 4th, 2004, a chain link fence with a no trespassing sign was posted by the contractors of the property owner of 188 Seacliff Avenue. And when certain residents of St. Andrews questioned the closure to the contractors, their response was that the owner had received permission from the Coastal Commission to close this trail. If this was a true statement, according to Linda Laughlin, the owner would have had to post a notice of a pending permit, and I have a copy of that permit in my file here for you. Upon further research, when I went on the website on Coastal Commission access, I researched the public prescriptive rights section, and it said one of the basic criteria to determining a public prescriptive right include that the land has been used for a prescriptive period of 5 years. In this case, it's been over 40. As it were public land, the use must be substantial rather than minimal and continue, though it not be continuous. I personally use this trail two or three times a day with my dogs, and I have a list of residents. We only had about 20 minutes to include signatures, but I have about 23 people that say they use this trail, if not every day, two or three times a week. So this access trail obviously hasn't been used minimally. And you, from the photographs, you can tell that there's definitely a trail there. This access, the use has been open and unobstructed. The use also has been adverse to any private property claims. The private property on either side of the access trail is fenced, and the trail parameters are very well marked. No property owner has at any time in the past 40 years asserted any ownership rights over the access trail nor attempted in any manner to obstruct the trail or prevent or restrict the public's use, and they should not be permitted to do this now. Here, I'll give you a...
Thank you. We'll get back to that issue in a little while. Arthur Anthony and Virginia Wright would be next.
Mr. Mayor, Honorable Council, Art Anthony, I live on Coral Court. Very briefly, you're very busy people. You're about to go to a League of Cities annual conference. You're going to spend a lot of time at that. I ask you to do one other thing for those of us who live in the city. While you're away, and perhaps before you go and after you return, give some more thought to the plan that Caltrans and SLOCOG and the city are conceiving to link Five Cities Drive and Price Street. As we know, that meeting scheduled to discuss this subject for the 17th of September has been canceled, and I'm grateful for that because you all could not have been there, and I think that would have been very bad. We don't know yet, I don't think, when it's been rescheduled, sometime I believe in October. I ask you to do this, which I have already done, so I know the answer already. think about how this change, these changes that are being proposed, are going to affect all of the people who live in the central and southern part of our city. For example, how are the folks who are some visitors and some residents along Dolliver Street near Pismo Coast Village, Holiday, Creekside, even the State Park Campground, how are they going to take access southbound to the freeway in future? Of course, we've already heard about the Hines Avenue ramp from the good folks at Roses who did a wonderful job. There's a lot more to this than meets the eye. One of the more important things to me, concerned about our tax dollars here, is what burden the city of Pismo Beach will be taking on our surface streets as a result of taking traffic off of the freeway. Thank you.
Thank you, Art. Virginia? Next would be Regis A. Farley. Go ahead.
My name is Virginia Wright. I live at 135 Seacliff Drive in Shell Beach. I've lived there since September 1960. And I have nothing new to add now that Sally and Jay Chappell have spoken, excepting that I'm one of the ones that have enjoyed access to the beach over these 40 years, and I would just be very sad if we could not be permitted to go there to see the ocean from that area. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
My name is Regis Farley, and this is probably not, this may not be the place to discuss this. Perhaps it's just a request that has to be made. We come here during the summer for 4 months, and as we left last year, we contacted sanitation to tell them that we would be leaving, and they said, great, but they continued to bill us for the 12 months. So anyway, I was told that in order to have that considered, otherwise, I'd need to present or discuss that with the city council. So
with us?
You help me on that, yes or no? Or
what do you mean by sanitation? I mean, your trash being picked up?
Trash, uh-huh.
So you're here for 3 months?
For 4 months.
For 4 months, and then you're being charged 12 months?
Right.
Okay.
All right. I tell you, I'm not quite sure that we're ready to discuss this today.
That's all right. I just wanted to present that because that has come up.
Right. City Manager.
Mr. Mayor and Council, I believe I received the same gentleman's letter today about this, and I am checking into it and finding out if we can help him out. You know, if it is the same gentleman, did you write me, sir?
No, I did not.
Okay, I guess I've got another one.
You got another one.
Okay. I'm checking into the problem, seeing what can be done.
Great.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. The wheels are already moving on you. Okay, Jim Lecha.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, Council. Jim Blecha, I live at 158 Baker. I want to back up, in the interest of my domestic tranquility, back up my wife, Sally, with her comments that she made about about the access at 188 Seacliff. I also feel exactly the same way. It's been there as long as I've been around, and much longer before then. I will put two more pieces of information out here for you, though. Some of our neighbors have engaged some of the construction workers in some conversation trying to figure out what's going on. One conversation that I had, the contractor apparently, because he had an open ditch that ran alongside that trail, had indicated that he closed it off because of liability issues. Later that same day, actually, he bent the wire and it ran parallel to the trench so that the access was opened. I thought that was great. You know, he was working with us. The second comment, though, was a little bit more troubling for me. I didn't hear it personally, but one of my neighbors did. It got kind of passed around that one of the construction workers, you know, wherever he gets his information, made the comment that my boss, the owner, has tons of money, and if this is going to be closed, that's the way it's going to go. That really does rankle me. You know, I really hope to move away from the Machiavellian, you know, might makes right, in this case might being money, and get back into the more democratic kind of thing and make sure that the right thing is done there. The access, it was pretty wide open before. If it's going to be restricted, limited a little bit more, that's fine, but as long as there's access maintained, and that's what we're interested in. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Rick Grinch.
Honorable Mayor, City Council members, Rick Grinsick, 369 Santa Fe. Thank you very much for your time. As you probably are aware, Shell Beach has had some issues before you over the years, especially over the last year or so. There's been some hotly debated issues. I had an idea a while back, and it seems to be gaining support. It is yet to be formed. It is yet to be named. But we're thinking about putting together a Shell Beach Neighborhood Association because Shell Beach has issues. And we want to become one of the squeaky wheels like downtown folks are. So before we get any web pages up, before we do anything, I just wanted to take this opportunity to let you know that this may be coming down the pipe. I'm not going to give my phone number out, but because I don't want every wacko to be calling me at 3 in the morning. But at the same time, if people see me around town, let's chat about it. And perhaps we can do some really good things for the entire community and specifically for Shell Beach community. Thank you very much for your time.
That's great. Thank you. I have one from Shelley Hickenbottom. You say you want 4 JW pulled. Is that all you wanted to say? Okay, great. It will be. Thank you. All right. That's all the requests that I have. Now, I would like to have staff give us a little bit of awareness as to what happened, what's going on with this coastal access situation.
The Planning Commission a while back approved a project that you see under construction today. Okay, is the microphone on? A number of months ago, the Planning Commission approved a project that you see under construction today. And during the process of the construction, they found that...
You know, not everybody may know where Seacliff is, and for our viewing audience, maybe you just ought to say directly where it is.
Seacliff is located off of Shell Beach Road, and it runs down... it ultimately parallels to the ocean, and it'll end you up to where Memory Park is located. Naomi is on the other end of Seacliff. Okay. Mm-hmm. This project... is located just before the curve that takes you towards Memory Park. It is a blufftop location. A number of months ago, the Planning Commission approved an addition to the development that you see under construction there now. It's an addition to the existing home. During the construction phase of the project, they learned that the original survey was inaccurate. They had it resurveyed and found that had they continued to construct as originally planned and as originally approved, they would actually almost be building right on their property line of their neighbor on the ocean side. As a result, they revised the project and have come in with plans to modify it so that they can pick up that square footage on the opposite side of the house adjacent to this trail area. When the project was approved, they showed an 8-foot setback to the property line from the edge of the building. The title report does not indicate a public access easement at that location. I've contacted the Coastal Commission. They cannot, to date, had not been able to come up with a coastal permit. The original track map for track 192, the St. Andrews tract, does not show a public access easement at this location. However, hopefully by the end of the week, I'll be hearing back from the Coastal Commission. They're digging into their archives to try to find a permit. From everything that we can tell at this point, there is not a requirement for this dedication. I spoke with someone.
Folks.
That's not nice.
I'm just sharing with you what I've learned. I've been searching and searching. I spoke with a Mr. Jackson today. I think his name is Gary. And he told me about, you know, his experience there. He'd lived there many years and some possibilities of places that I could look. He was going to be going to the county to research their records.
and the land was subdivided and created the St. Andrews Tract. It was done in 1960. So as you look at the face of the map where all of the land is divided into individual parcels, all the signatures are county staff people's signatures, the county clerk, the board of supervisors, et cetera. So that's an avenue he was exploring, and I asked him to please call me back if he found anything there. So right now it's in a little state of limbo. What the applicant has proposed to make up the difference on his, what he would have lost on the side that there was a survey error, is to encroach 3 feet into this 8-foot area. And that would still retain for about a third of the linear footage of the building a 5-foot trail area. And then there would be 8-foot the rest of the way as you see today. I've not heard that the applicant intends to close this, nor that I heard that he doesn't intend to close it. Staff is going to be putting together a notice that's going to go out to the neighborhood tomorrow indicating that the applicant has proposed a change to what the Planning Commission approved to include this particular area that we're talking about, this little 3-foot area into the setback, into that 8-foot area. It's a little hard to demonstrate this because I don't have a plan that and it was not on your agenda, but that is that's what's going on. In the meantime, all the neighbors will get a copy of the notice, and we're looking at getting it to the newspaper, so the major modification portion of the permit of what the Planning Commission approved will go to the Planning Commission at their last meeting in September, which is the 28th, I believe. So that's what's going on with that. And anybody who would like to come in or has information, that I would be more than happy to take it. I was really interested to hear Mrs. Bleck's comments because our own local coastal plan does not identify this as an accessway. The local coastal plan that we submitted to the Coastal Commission in 92, they did not comment that there was an accessway at this location. The plans that were approved by the Planning Commission, we sent them off to the Coastal Commission. They did not respond saying, where's an accessway? So I'm really anxious to look at this information, get the permits from the Coastal Commission. Hopefully by the end of this week, they will have researched their archives. I know Linda Lachlan, the Coastal Access Manager for the Commission, and I do want to talk to her as well. So that's kind of the nutshell version of what's going on, but we're making every effort to locate the documentation on this easement. So.
Well, tell you what bothers me about this, again, is that all of a sudden the tail is wagging the dog. You know, we are the dog and the Coastal Commission is the tail, and they're telling us what they're going to approve. Now, I know for a fact that that was an easement, or at least may not have been a dedicated easement, but I remember walking my little children through that area because I lived there, and I did that for at least 6 or 7 years straight because we had friends that lived on the other side, and so we'd walk through Spyglass Park, and that was the route that we took. You know, this is completely different than the other easement that for which we can't do anything about right now over, where was it? That came up a couple of weeks ago.
Ocean Boulevard.
Ocean Boulevard, right. So this one here really bothers me because all of a sudden everything is what the Coastal Commission says. It doesn't matter what we say.
Well, actually, if I could clarify, when this house was built, the original house, the city did not have local coastal jurisdiction. That was before we had a coastal plan. So the Coastal Commission had to have approved that original house. And if they required an access easement, it should be on the plans that they approved. And so I'm crossing my fingers that they will send me a stamped plan that shows exactly what they did approve. And that's the best I can do because the city didn't have jurisdiction at the time. Mm-hmm. We do now. But at that time, you know, the city didn't have jurisdiction. So it would really be helpful to get that, and I'm waiting for that. Hopefully by the end of the week we'll have it.
Okay. Yes, let's really investigate this. We're getting very close to the 7:30 time that we're going to go ahead and have our public hearings. But this is obviously a hot button for the people in the St. Andrews area, and so we need to address it. Anybody else want to say
anything? Well, on that list, I think there's a phone number for Sally, so that if something does come in, that you could contact her.
I was hoping I could get a copy of this if she wouldn't mind leaving it, so we could copy it.
Yeah, I think you have it right there.
And then just one comment on my part is that if in fact there is no coastal access there, when it goes before the Planning Commission, we're certainly inviting all of these people to come to the Planning Commission. And at that point in time, if they are not satisfied then with those results, then those results can be appealed to the City Council.
And to the Coastal
Commission. And to the Coastal Commission. So you really have, different ways to look at this whole project. So,
And it's possible the owner of the project might just keep it open.
Well,
that's what it sounded like to me.
It's been my understanding from everyone that's called in, my discussions with the project architect, he is here, that this has been open for many years, mm-hmm. and none of the property owners have ever attempted to stop anyone from using the area. So
it may be
I
a moot
certainly
point.
Understand the fear, though. I mean, mm-hmm.
Yeah, I had a lot of phone calls on it. So.
Right. Okay.
Yep. Keep us aware. Okay, one more item before we move on. Does the council want to act on Larry Pearson's request to put his request on the agenda for next time?
I think maybe the city manager should comment on that, maybe.
Well,
or the city attorney.
We only have 1 minute.
As council may be aware, my partner Mike Jenks has been dealing with most of the conversations with Los Robles del Mar's representatives. I was not able to speak with him about this issue, obviously, because it came up this evening. I would be uncomfortable in moving forward with any of the legal issues until I talked with Mike. As far as the public works, I guess, issues with respect to the water, I think Mr. Delzeit has previously set forth his position regarding the availability of water, and I'm not sure that situation has changed, although Mr. Persons and his attorney did mention that a letter had been circulated, and that letter may have some answers on that issue. So with the information, at least that I have right now, I'd feel a little uncomfortable going forward without knowing what we're going to be getting into at the September meeting, but we can certainly take a look at it, and if we believe it's appropriate, put it back on the council agenda.
Mr. Mayor and Council, I'd only add that Mr. Persons did do a detailed pumping record as requested by the Council back in March, and it's a very thick document published in June of this year, and that's, of course, available to you all, and I think a number of you have already read it and are aware of its contents.
The only reason why I'm talking about this right now, and we probably shouldn't be because the time is up, but the fact is that, this has been going on for 17 years, and I'd like to either get it off the dime or, make a decision, period. 17 years is long enough for anyone to be discussing about one subject. So that's why I'm even bringing it up right now.
If the council wishes me to put it on the agenda, I'll be happy to put it on the agenda. But, again, Mr. Fleischman's given you a warning about Mr. Jenks, his partner, Mr. Jenks, and the water issues. I would recommend that we talk about this further. Again, I'll be willing to put it on the agenda, but I don't know at this point what will be solved by putting it on the agenda, but if you want, I'll be more than happy to do it.
Well, Mr. Mayor, since it's reached this point, I need to excuse myself. I petitioned the Federal Fair Political Practices Commission with reference to donations received. I have not had a reply to that request yet, so I don't feel comfortable.
It's on the agenda, though.
I guess I would also add
it's
that
not on
the
agenda anyway.
It's not on the agenda for tonight. So there's no requirement that the council has to make a decision on it tonight. Mm-hmm. And so I'd add that. Additionally, we're also into the public hearing period, which we're required to start.
Okay. Okay. I'll leave it up to you to then do a little bit more investigation, and then we'll do something with it.
Well, yeah, when Mr. Fleischman feels comfortable, I think we should get it on the agenda.
Okay.
I think we need to do more research.
I would agree if that's, you know, if the city attorney says that we should put it on the agenda, that'll be fine, but I don't think he can do that. No, I said if he does in the future indicate that that's appropriate, I think we should do that.
In the future. Okay. Mm-hmm.
All right. We're not going to touch any of the consent items because we've gone beyond the time. So we're going to go to the public hearings. Okay? And so we are now in 5A. By the way, thank you very much for assisting us with our meeting. Okay. Mr. City Manager?
Whoops.
City Manager?
I'm sorry, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Mayor and Council, the first item, item 5A in the public hearing portion of tonight's agenda, is the adoption of a resolution accepting the Coastal Commission's modifications to minor general plan amendments and amending the general plan, and secondly, the first reading of an ordinance adopting the Coastal Commission's modifications to the 1983 zoning code. I'd like to ask Ms. Johnson, the acting planning manager, or the planning manager, to comment on this agenda item.
Mayor Crescioni, members of the council, this is a fairly straightforward item for discussion. The Planning Commission and then ultimately the council came to some conclusions on amendments to our general plan earlier this year. And procedurally, whenever you do that, and it's a part of our local coastal plan, you have to forward those items on to the Coastal Commission for them to certify it. They go through it. They think about it. They look at it, decide whether or not they agree with what you've come up with as modifications. And oftentimes they will send back things that they would like to see changed. They did that in this case. They're all very minor and workable. So we are recommending that you go ahead and accept these modifications that they have proposed. They're fairly similar in nature to what we already had, but they just tightened up some of the language a little bit. And we find that when we go through this amendment process with the Coastal Commission, on the items that really there is a lot of room to give, it's better to give than not, because there are items down the road that you may not want to give quite so easily. Yeah. This is one of those that we suggest you accept these modifications. I'm sure you read through the report, so I won't enumerate the different changes, but we're recommending that you adopt the resolution and enter into the first reading of the ordinance.
Okay. Any questions from council before we go to the public?
I have none.
Nobody? I have none at this time, Mr. Mayor.
I have
okay.
None.
I'm going to open this up to the public. Anyone that wishes to talk on item 5A, which has to do with the Coastal Commission amendments that they're accepting? Okay, in that case, then I'll close it. Give it back to the council. Any other concerns, wishes?
No, I agree with Carolyn's assessment.
All right, Rudy?
No, I was just going to ask. There's no tricky situations in there, are there?
Nope.
Okay.
Marianne?
I think that we reviewed these before they got sent on.
Yes, you did.
So I don't see that there's anything in there that's unusual or I would be concerned about, and I would agree with Carolyn that we should just go ahead and adopt these.
Okay. Arlene?
I agree as well, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. And Bill?
Yes.
Okay, great. And frankly, I read through them myself, and I didn't see it. Of course, I didn't read them as an attorney would, but I don't know. Because I'm not. Mayor, but it sure sounds like words to me.
I'd like to move, Mr. Mayor, that we, in fact, how do you want that stated? Because there's two aspects.
Adopt a resolution.
Two motions?
I think your first motion would be to adopt the resolution.
Accepting.
Your second motion would be for first reading of the ordinance, adopting the ordinance. Right.
Yes, so we'll have the first motion to adopt the resolution.
Yes, okay. Then I'll move that we adopt the resolution.
I second it.
Okay, so we have
an echo.
Echo.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Passes 5-0. Thank you.
Okay. Now we need one for the
second
first reading of the ordinance. Somebody make a motion for that?
I'll make the motion.
Need a second?
I want to see Piggly Wiggly.
I'll second it.
Okay.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Passes 5-0. Thank you.
Okay, great. 5B, City Manager.
Mr. Mayor and Council, item 5B is actually brought to us a while back, I think you remember, by one of our citizens, Mr. Gallo, to correct a problem with essentially the address up on the street he lives on. It's a resolution to change the name of a portion of Hanford Street to Lemoore Street, and this will be a changing in the record book of a section of that street. It won't affect the signs on the street. I'd like Mr. Duncan, one of our engineers, to talk a little bit more about it. Mr. Brian Duncan.
Thank you, City Manager. Mayor Crescione, members of the council, there's a portion of Hanford Street that is it on now? Okay. We have a portion of Hanford Street that was dedicated quite a few years back, 1925, I believe, and the portion that's outlined that's highlighted on the right is called Hanford Street. It's marked as Lemoore Street and has caused confusion for property owners down along the south side of what used to be Selma Street.
Very good.
Right.
What we are requesting to do is to approve a resolution to officially change this portion of Hanford Street to Lemoore Street so it would agree with the street signage and people that have addresses along this, particularly these six properties, would be marked as Lemoore Street. Right now, the police, fire, ambulance,
UPS,
delivery, post office, they're all having problems finding these properties because it's they're seeing the name Lemoore Street, but officially it's called Hanford Street. This would be a resolution to change the map to go and change the map at the county recorder's office.
So again, I'd just add that, of course, this you heard Mr. Gallo before come before us. I think it was approximately a month ago, and we're responding to his concern and essentially correcting something that needs to be corrected.
Great.
Okay.
Any other questions?
No questions.
No. All right. Let me open it to the public. Anyone in the public that wishes to discuss this issue? All right, we'll close it. Bring it back to council. Any more discussion on the council? Oh. I'll open it again for you.
Well, thank you. Mike on 700 Lemoore. I was hoping we could change the name to Lanai Street. Change the whole street name to Lanai. A nice beachy Hawaiian name.
Thank you.
Is that a no?
With that, I'm going to close it. All right. Other discussion?
It's a good comment.
No, I'd like to move that we approve the resolution for the name change.
Second that.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Passes 5-0. Thank you.
Okay.
Whoops.
Item 5C.
He's opposed. Teasing.
Okay. 5C?
Mr. Mayor and Council, 5C is a resolution. It's an item which is a resolution adopting a new integrated solid waste rates, which would be effective October of this year. We have Mr. Bill Statler here to brief us. We've engaged him, actually we, being the cities of Oceano, Grover Beach, Arroyo Grande, and our city, to see if the proposed rates make sense, if they're fair, or if there's any inconsistencies in this proposed rate schedule. I'd like to, as Bill's getting prepared, tell you a little bit about Bill, because he's not only going to talk to us about this new rate schedule for solid waste rates, but he's also going to give a very important presentation on our five-year financial forecast and an examination of revenue options. So a little bit about Bill Statler. He has over 30 years of municipal financial management experience. For the past 16 years, he has served as the Director of Finance and Information Technology and the City Treasurer for the City of San Luis Obispo. Before this, he served for 10 years as the Chief Financial Officer for the City of Simi Valley. In addition to financial management, Bill's responsibilities for San Luis Obispo also include organization-wide information technology operations. Bill, under his leadership, the City of San Luis Obispo has received numerous national recognition for its financial planning and reporting systems, including an award for distinguished budget presentation from the Government Finance Officers Association of the United States and Canada, with special recognition as an outstanding policy document, financial plan, and communications device. San Luis Obispo is one of only a handful of cities in the entire nation to receive this special recognition. Additionally, some of Bill's professional leadership positions, he's been president of the Fiscal Officers Department of the League of California Cities. He's been president of the California Society of Municipal Finance Officers. He's a member of the Board of Directors of the California Society of Municipal Financial Officers. He's a member of that Board of Directors. He's chair of the Central Coast chapter of that same Financial Officers Association. And he's a member of the Government Finance Officers Association. That's an association of Canadian and U.S. financial officers. And he's a member of the Committee on Governmental Budgeting and Financial and Fiscal Policy of that association. So I'd like to welcome Bill, and he's going to first talk to us about this new solid waste rates.
That's very impressive. You have grown into quite a bureaucrat, haven't you? Huh? My goodness.
I
never know if that's a compliment or not.
As an intro to this, when I briefed those city managers on the results of this, I said, you know, I have a longer, more comprehensive presentation, but I could also do a shorter, more concise one. The overwhelming sentiment was the shorter, more concise one. So that's the one that we'll do. Report purpose, in essence, is to analyze the rate request by South County Sanitary Service for four agencies, the City of Arroyo Grande, the City of Grover Beach, the City of Pismo Beach, and the Oceano Community Services District. Why do these jointly? You have virtually the exact same level of services in terms of curbside trash, curbside recycling, curbside green waste. You have almost exactly identical franchise agreements. You've all adopted the rate setting method, the same rate setting and review methodology, and the financial information is closely related for all four of the agencies. The reality is if I analyze the rate increase for one agency, I've really analyzed it in essence for all four. High-level overview of the findings. South County Sanitary Services provided all the recording required supporting documentation that's required under your franchise agreement with them. They provide a very comprehensive level of service, curbside trash, recycling, and green waste, all at very competitive rates compared with other Central Coast communities. In fact, even after the rate increase that's in front of you this evening, you will still have some of the lowest rates among all of those that we surveyed of comparable Central Coast cities. And thirdly, as we'll discuss a little bit later, they've done an excellent job of controlling costs. Rate review work scope, in summary, is first, should South County Sanitary District be granted a rate increase at all? And if they should be, then how much? Really three questions we have to ask and answer in order to determine that. And the first one is, how much does it cost them to provide the service levels that you require under your franchise agreement? Secondly, are those costs reasonable? And if those costs are reasonable, then what's a reasonable rate of return on those costs? The basis for evaluating the review is the rate-setting manual in the city of San Luis Obispo. It's one of the reasons I was asked to do this analysis. There was some hope I would be familiar with what that 100-page document suggests. And this has been adopted by the city as its basis for considering rates by South County Sanitary District. In coming up with the recommendations before this evening, I took a detailed look at your franchise agreement and any amendments that there have been to it, reviewed the audited financial statements for South County Sanitary District, obviously reviewed the rate-setting manual itself, reviewed in detail all of the application and supporting documentation provided by South County Sanitary District, had interviews with your staff, with the county, and with the SCSC staff, and lastly conducted rate surveys of other Central Coast communities. So the first question, are the costs reasonable? I looked at this really from three different perspectives. The first one was a detailed review of their costs and how those components have changed over the last 4 years, compared those with changes in the Consumer Price Index, which is sort of an external benchmark we can use to compare how reasonable that is, and then thirdly, compared your rates with comparable communities. If we take a look at the cost for the South County Sanitary District to provide services in this area, about $8 million a year in costs. The single highest cost that they have, almost 40%, is for the direct cost of collection labor. The second most important cost is tipping fees, direct pass-through costs to the landfill, vehicle maintenance and operation, including depreciation and insurance, about another 20%. Franchise fees, which they don't directly control but are pass-throughs to the various agencies, about 8%. Long story short, about 85% of all their total costs are in these four cost categories. So we take a look at how those have increased over the last, took a detailed look at it over time, but if we look at just the last 2 years, see the direct labor, their most significant cost actually went down a little bit. Their tipping fees up by about 3%. That's just due to an increase in the amount of material taken to the landfill or for green waste to recycling. Vehicle maintenance and operation went up by less than 1%. Office salaries actually went down by 3%. In total, on average, over the last 2 years, their costs went up by 1% a year. I think that shows significant cost containment. If we compare that to changes in the Consumer Price Index, 2 years ago, their costs actually went down by about 1%. The Consumer Price Index went up by 2%. Last year, both their costs and the Consumer Price Index went up by about the same rate, but if we take a look on average over the last 2 years, their costs went up by 1%. The Consumer Price Index went up by 2.7%. If those costs are reasonable, and I believe they are, given the significant cost containment that they've exhibited since the last base year review, the rate-setting manual organizes them into three basic cost categories. The first is allowable costs, basically direct operation and maintenance, and what that means by allowable is these are costs they're allowed to earn a profit on. Second cost group are called pass-through costs. They're not allowed to earn a profit on these, but they are allowed to recover those costs, and that's franchise fees and tipping fees. And then the third category are excluded and limited costs where they're not allowed to earn any profit or even get recovery for any costs that fit into this category at all. So the methodology is for they're allowed a 92% operating profit ratio on their allowable costs. In essence, put stated differently, they're allowed to earn 8% on their allowable costs. No profit is allowed on their pass-through costs, but they are allowed to recover those in full through their rates. And again, they're not allowed to get any revenues for those excluded costs. I think an important concept is there's no retroactivity here. If they're entitled to an 8% yield, if they don't achieve that in the past, there's no way through the rate structure for them to recover that. In 2003, for example, their operating cost ratio was about 2%. There's no way in this rate methodology for them to recover that in the past, but every 3 years, through this base rate analysis, it's an opportunity for them to get that bar back to that 8% that the franchise agreement says they're entitled to. An important concept of implementation, we do a base year detailed analysis like we have this year, once every 3 years, and this is the second comprehensive rate analysis like this that the city of Pismo Beach has done. In the intervening 2 years, basically an adjustment for CPI and tipping fees. So basic conclusion is the costs are reasonable, and given that, the proposed rate increase meets the reasonable return criteria in your franchise agreement. What that means is a across-the-board increase of 5.3% for residential as well as non-residential customers. Here's just an example for the residential rates. For those folks that are the 32-gallon category, I should point out this is for trash only. You obviously get the standard size green waste wheeler and the blue waste wheeler for your recycling and green waste. Basically, it's about a 58%, less than 60% increase for those folks with the 32-gallon cans. Coordination with other agencies, SCSC, South County Sanitary Service, submitted very similar rate applications to all of the agencies in the South County. The rate increase has been approved by the City of Rio Grande. The City of Grover Beach just did it about 20 minutes ago. Napomo Community Services District in the County of San Luis Obispo, and we will be presenting this same information to the Oceano Community Services District tomorrow evening. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you have about the proposed rate increase in front of you this evening.
Thank you. Anyone have any questions?
Yes, just a quick one, yeah. We entered into a tent. I have to remember, the public needs to remember that this council's built sewer plants, we're building roads. I mean, it's hard to remember all of the details of everything that we do. But we entered into a 10-year agreement in order for a capital appropriation for the sanitary district. They upgrade equipment, buy new equipment, and all that kind of stuff. And right, and in order to do that, they needed to be able to show the bank that they were going to be able to sustain that income for that period of time. Correct?
Well, let me just feedback. You entered into a 10-year agreement with them.
Uh-huh.
There were some costs that they needed to amortize, and really I believe they did it in the first 3 years, of mm-hmm. that comprehensive service of providing the green waste wheelers and the blue waste wheelers. Mm-hmm. But as part of that 10-year franchise agreement, this is the rate-setting methodology that you approved.
Okay. I guess then my question was, because then in that 10-year agreement, we did not build in an automatic rate increase.
Absolutely not. This is the process for approving rates for them.
And CPI wasn't built into that for that 10-year period as well?
Again, in doing the rate setting, it's really on a 3-year cycle. Uh-huh. Every 3 years, a comprehensive analysis like this one, and then the interim 2 years, there's a CPI adjustment plus an adjustment for tipping fee rates. But this comprehensive review every 3 years, that's what resets the bar. If they were earning more than 8%, return, then we would be reducing rates.
Okay, and then my final question on that is that because the tipping fees are included in any adjustments, meaning that if the landfill itself increases their rate, they are not absorbed by our residents. They are, in fact, then absorbed through the pass-through.
Right. There's no profit to South County Sanitary District when tipping fees go up.
Right.
They are allowed to increase their fees by however much that goes up so that they don't lose money because of that.
Well, yeah, but my question
is, they're not allowed to earn a profit on it.
Right. But are you going to be coming to us in another year or another 6 months or saying, well, now the landfill has increased their cost of doing business, so now we need to come back to you and now we're going to increase again?
A year from now, they would be eligible under the interim rate increase.
Okay.
I'm sure that Tom will be coming back to you, Tom Martin with South County Sanitary.
Right.
He'll be coming back with analysis to say how CPI has increased, and he'll be coming back with analysis indicating how tipping fees have increased. Okay. And again, the rate setting manual has a very detailed way of handling those cost increases, but they can't come forward to you until that year interim year period of time.
Gotcha. All right. I understand. Thank you, Mayor.
Okay. Any other questions?
I didn't have this question, but when is the 10-year agreement up?
You have different time frames, but basically 2009.
Okay. And then another question I had was revenue and rate setting objectives. It says there's a rate manual. Who produced the rate manual?
The City of San Luis Obispo.
City of San Luis Obispo produced the rate manual? Okay.
Yeah, this is the document in full. It's about a 100-page document. We adopted it in 1994. We actually contract with a consultant, Arthur Young, to help us develop this. But this was a model that we developed in San Luis Obispo, and really all of those four agencies by reference said, boy, this makes sense, and rather than spending our own energy developing this kind of thing, let's just adopt that manual by reference.
Okay, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else?
Yeah, I have a question that a lot of people have asked me in the past. We separate everything for the South County. They pick up all our stuff separated, and they take them down, and they get them distributed to wherever they have to. Now, there is monies involved there. I know that they've got to get paid for the paper, whatever else that they're recycling. Is that figured in any of these figures?
Yeah, to the degree that there are non-rate revenues, like revenues from recycling, then that goes towards reducing the overall cost. I think the reality is the recycling market has been such in the last 3 years there have not been any significant revenues from that. But if there were, then that would be credited. And there's a small amount of non-rate-based revenues. But basically, we take what their costs are, we would subtract from that their non-rate revenues, and then we would set rates to take care of the difference. Tom could probably talk more about what the recycling market has been like, but I don't think it's been strong. I don't think it's practical. There's actually been any revenues generated from that.
Okay. Thank you.
Marianne?
Just a comment, really. I think the thing that I noted is that our franchise fees are less than other cities.
Yeah, there is an analysis of rate revenues in your packet of other comparable communities, not just those that are serviced by South County Sanitary District, but throughout the regional area. And again, you will have, even with this rate increase, among the lowest rates of all of those folks in the county.
Okay. Any other questions?
No.
Open it up to the public, if you don't mind. Anyone that wishes to discuss this, please come forward.
Tom Martin from the garbage company. I'm not up here to complain, trust me. I just wanted to remind everybody that next week is cleanup week. So it's put out your 12 extra cans of trash and put it out in anything you want. And we take it all away. If you don't mark your containers, we're going to take your boxes and anything else away you put out there. But that's next week. The other thing I wanted to remind everybody is that on page 552 of your telephone book, there is a little tab in there. And there is a section in there that has everything you would ever want to know about what goes in your blue can and what goes in your green can. And we encourage everybody to look at it. It was done in conjunction with the IWMA. It's very user-friendly, and there's pictures. And so use that, because that will help you put more of it in the blue and the green and less in the gray. That's all I have to say.
Is that, if I may, Mr. Mayor, is that a concern? Are you still having a lot of problem with the recycling end of it, having the wrong stuff put in the containers?
Well, there tend to be not so much quite in Pismo Beach, but some of the other areas we get a little bit more transient business, and it's hard to, as they move in and change on an annual basis, it's hard to keep people informed about, you know, what to put in the green and what to put in the blue. So we've tried to do this. And keeping reinforcing it. We have a pretty mature program, so there's not a lot of contamination going on. And in Pismo Beach, you have the highest percentage of one-can customers of all the people that we service because of the way you set up your rate structure. So most of the people in Pismo are in the one-can rate, which is where you want to be.
Exactly.
Big recycling cans, little garbage cans.
Yeah. I remember, Mr. Mayor, my first introduction to Tom was in a tent at the top of a dump back in 1998 when I first became a member of the city council here, having a lunch up there. It was quite interesting. And maybe you and I ought to talk about, maybe we should do a 15-minute segment on my TV program to get that out to another 20,000 people.
I hear the crowd grumbling. Yeah, sure.
That's all right. They grumble at me all the time anyway. Thanks, Al.
Thank you very much.
Versus recyclable waste. And I have a reason for asking that. And as you know, I have some commercial businesses downtown. And I've run into this time and time again. One of the things that we've been mandated to do or requested to do is to try to minimize the solid waste going in and recycle as much as possible. So we should have an incentive program to recycle. Now, after having said that, follow me here if you can. I'll try to keep it real simple, because it kind of gets convoluted. If you have a blue trash can, a big one, a 1 yarder, yard and a half, whatever it is, it's $5 a month for 2 times a week for the recycle. Now, if you're collecting cardboard and lots of volume in some of the businesses, and let's say that 2 times a week every month is insufficient, you want to go to 3 times a week, you want to recycle and not put it in the trash, it goes up to $31 a month. I don't see the correlation there if you're trying to give an impetus to people to use it. However, you can get a second 1 yard and a half container, and it's only $5. It'll go back to 2 times a week. So now you have two on your property, and it'll go back to 2 times a week, and it'll be $5 a month. So you'd be paying 10 to get it four times, in essence, a week, or you can get three times a week and pay 31. I don't see the sensibility of that, and I have asked time and time again, and I've never gotten really an answer to it. But as of about 3 weeks ago, that was still the case. Thank you.
Mike Hahn, 951 Fresno. I see that there's a 92% profit margin that they're allowed to make. Well,
No. Upside down, 8%.
Okay.
8%.
One way they have lowered their cost of doing business is by making everybody separate the trash and the recyclables. And back then, when the other company owned it, we didn't have to separate it, and it was cheaper. Now we're separating everything, paper, cardboard. They're recycling asphalt and concrete and making road class 2 road base, and this is a saleable item. There's wood, aluminum, and steel. All of these, like aluminum, is getting pretty good price, and so is steel. So how they can charge that much, I was just wondering how this all... We're separating everything, doing their job, and the prices go up still.
I think we're going to get a little rebuttal. Please.
In response to the gentleman who was just up here, I think what he's talking about is out at the landfill. When you take your stuff out there, you're now required to put it in four different categories that we have, steel, concrete, and those kind of things. And that's a landfill operation. And that doesn't really have anything to do with what we're addressing tonight. South County Sanitary collects your garbage, and they take it to the landfill, and the Board of Supervisors sets the rate at the landfill. He is correct. We do require you to separate a whole bunch of stuff now, and the prices have gone up. It was felt that to have the residential community subsidize the commercial people for 3-4 times a week collection when the residents get it once a week was the reason why that there is a charge for anything above 2 times a week. We want you to minimize those collection costs and keep prices down, but the cost drivers for 5 times a week collection, we didn't want those to be borne by the residential community. So if you go to 3, 4, 5, or 6 times a week recycling service, it's at 50% of the garbage rate. And we believe that that is an incentive to recycle it. If you throw it away, it's 100%. If you recycle it, it's 50%. And we think that provides the businesses with an excellent incentive to recycle more and more. And I think I got everything else. You want to jump in?
The other question was, how did the change in ownership coincide with those reduced costs? Actually, the new Waste Connections, the new owner, they cover both of those 2 years at those reduced costs. So I don't know if it's directly attributable to that, but the reality is with Waste Connections, that's where you saw those 2 significant years where costs went down.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Tony Spinelli. I'd like to take this one step farther. I'd like to expand on what Don was talking about. I've got a 5-yard, the big blue container, 4-yard, okay, dumpster that they collect twice a week. Now, originally, before this new ownership took over, they collected Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Well, then they cut back 2 times a week. I was trying to be neighborly with all the neighbors and allow them to use my dumpster because there's some places that couldn't accommodate any dumpsters. So when the new regime took over, and you're talking 50%, we're not talking $30. 50% of my trash bill was, my trash bill runs about $230 a month for my dumpster. And I called them up and I wanted one more trip on Wednesday for the recycle bin. Well, you take 50% of $230 and figure it out. That's a lot of money for 4 more times a month. Now, I can appreciate them making extra trips downtown, but when there's a truck circling downtown every day of the week, and there's a recycle truck down there on Wednesdays, and for them to tell me it's going to be another $115 a month when it's only going to cost me $5, I can get another dumpster, which is cheaper, but we don't have the room in the parking lot. So the reason I'm bringing this up is $30 doesn't sound like a lot of money. But when you start talking these big dumpsters, you're talking about $115 a month. That starts adding up when you do it on an annual basis. Thank you.
Anybody else? All right. I'm going to close the hearing, but the staff needs to continue on.
I just wanted to make one comment, Mr. Mayor. Earlier this evening, I think a speaker, not recognizing what was on the agenda, spoke to the matter of being here for 3 months and saying, and one of the things that Mr. Martin had done in the rates that are on here tonight, it's on referred to at the page 73 of the packet. Down at the very bottom is an extended vacation allowance, and it at least addresses in part that
the cost of disposal, because if the person's gone, there's no disposal, and all I have to do, I still have to drive the truck down the street past his house every week, so my labor and my fuel and my truck costs don't change, but my disposal goes down. So what we did is implemented a rate that has no disposal in it. It's just to cover the baseline cost of driving the truck down the street so that the other citizens who have to stay here 11 and a half months out of the year don't subsidize those people that leave for 4 months out of the year. So I think it addresses the – I wasn't here when the gentleman was here, but it's come up in other cities as well.
Okay. So I'm assuming that you'll be talking to them about it.
We can, and yeah. By being on here in public, I think right. There's a notification process that they yeah. – Okay. Need to go through to get that rate reduction.
Okay, good. All right. Anybody else have anything to talk about this point here? One of the things that I did was when I was reading the report, the very first question that came to my mind is, you know, why is all these cities making their own contracts and I'm looking at all these different variations, and I'm almost convincing myself that why don't we do it all as a unit? Then I realized the fact that what we're doing is actually a pretty good idea, because when I started reading it, I realized the fact that we here in Pismo are actually, and I'm going to use the word a little smarter here, because if you take a look at the, and watch your eyes over there, if you look at the chart that I put together the other night, this is the regular solid waste fees that we are supposed to be receiving. And from this fee, we can see the fact that this is the typical household bill that we acknowledge that most people receive. Now, Pismo Beach's franchise fee is 6%, whereas Arroyo Grande's and Grover Beach and Oceano's is actually 10%. So when I looked at that, I told myself, well, what are we actually saving our citizens? And so in that respect, then we're looking at, you know, this identifies really an 88 cents fee that we are paying for that barrel that they're picking up for us, whereas in Arroyo Grande, the citizens are actually paying $1.46, and so in fact, when we drag this on out to a year, we actually are saving this kind of money to our citizens, and that is what, you know, pennies amount to dollars, and by golly, there we are. We are actually saving almost $2,000 to our citizens in Pismo Beach. And that's just because, obviously, we're a little bit cleverer in being able to negotiate a better deal. So I thought this was actually an interesting thing, and I know that Marianne brought out the fact that we had a different percentage here. But what does that really mean? I saw this as a way of being able to explain to the citizens
and you did a good job
that
too.
We're not thank you.
You did, though, truly.
I
you're accepting
took
those.
Time out to do it.
Yeah,
Gemini,
yes, I know it.
I took time out to do it.
He doesn't take compliments from you very well.
No. All right, let's move on. So what do you want us to do on this with reference to this?
Sir, what we're requesting is if the council agrees with what's been proposed to adopt a resolution on the new waste rate schedules, mm-hmm. per the new rate schedule.
Okay, I need a motion.
Well, I believe that it's a reasonable increase, and I will move for that.
Second it.
Okay.
Just under discussion, did we really get any answer to the commercial account? Was there an answer?
Yes, you
are. I'm not sure exactly what the answer was on the specific question. I think Tom did try and address how the rate structure is set up for extra garbage service versus extra recycling service, and the reality is the rate for the recycling service is 50% of the garbage service. So with your rate structure, and this is one other area when you ask how come everybody doesn't have the same rates, two key reasons. The first one is you have a lower franchise rate than the other folks. So you, to the degree you've made a conscious decision to be at 6 instead of 10, you want your residents to receive that benefit. The second one is everybody has a different rate schedule. You have the only rate schedule where a 32-gallon can, the cost for a 64-gallon can is directly proportional, so that if you take a 64 service or a 2-can service over 1-can service, it's twice as much. If you take a 96-can service, it's 3 times as much. The other folks have a higher fee for the lower-level service, but that means that they get a lower fee for the 64 and the 96 can. This is a conscious decision you've made, which quite frankly I think is a more conservation-oriented rate, where the cost per gallon is the same for all of your customers. You are the only city in this area that has that. So as long as individual councils have different rate structure goals, you're going to have different rates, even though the basic cost of collection is the same for a residential account in Arroyo Grande, in Pismo Beach. But because you have different rate structures and different goals, you're going to have different rates. And in your case, you have a lower franchise fee.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, are you satisfied with the answers?
No.
Or
I'm sure they're not. Just,
I think Dante had a question.
But we all know that things have been going up. Okay, Don, come on up quick so that we can move on.
Dante, 101 Park Place, Pismo Beach. Not to belabor a point, but if we want people to recycle, we need to make it cost-effective. Now, I'm going to give you a prime example of what happens. I've got tenants that have a yard and a half or 3 yard or whatever the large containers are. I beat them up. I yell at them. I coerce them to recycle. The recycle bin gets full. It doesn't get picked up. They get 3 and 4 times a week pickup in the summertime of their big trash container that goes into the dump. It doesn't get recycled. It's not separated. If they don't have a place to put their trash, rather than put it on the ground all over the downtown. Thank you.
Don, I remember when we used to have paper drives at school, and the school used to make money on it. So I have some crazy feelings about what you've just discussed, and I agree. Okay. All right. Can I have a motion, please? We have
a motion and a second. Councilmember Rabinal?
Yes.
Councilmember Natoli?
Yes.
Councilmember Gonzalez-G?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Reese?
Yes.
Mayor Cushioni?
Yes.
Passes 5-0. Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks, Tom. Good seeing you.
Now we're on item 6A.
Well,
you want to go back?
We need to go to council comments. But
council comments and our consent agenda.
Why do we want to do that?
Because we didn't do it.
Mr. Mayor, Council, you all do have the option. You could go ahead and do a business item or two, and then go back and pick up the consent agenda. I mention this because the next briefing is really quite meaty, pretty substantial, and I would recommend that we not delay it till late in the evening. Because there's a lot to be briefed and a lot to consider.
Okay, then why don't we take a little break, 5-minute break, and then come back. Could we please have some semblance of order? Thank you. I have been asked to do a little quick switcheroo here, and we have an item on the agenda that has to do with a very simple report that we had. So I would like to switch item 6B. Let it go on first, if you don't mind.
Mr. Mayor and Councilor.
Go ahead. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Mr. Mayor and Councilor, item 6B is the results of a survey that the engineering staff conducted down in Shell Beach to determine the property owners there, if they'd be willing to, what they thought of building some improvements in the Shell Beach area on the roads that they were living on, the nine streets that were concerned. This was directed by the council back about a month and a half, 2 months ago, as an inquiry from one of the citizens, and so we followed up. Mr. Duncan has been heading up the project, and I'd like to ask Mr. Brian Duncan to give us a brief explanation.
Mr. City Manager and Mr. Mayor, I need to recuse myself. I live on Morrow Avenue, and it is part of this discussion.
Thank you.
Okay. So anyway, Mr. Duncan's going to give you the results of the surveys that were conducted. We have statistics that show it street by street, how many people responded, total respondents, how many voted yes, how many voted no, and he'll give you a
survey. Into that single asphalt. Some of these properties have historical drainage problems. There is no way to convey the drainage from Shell Beach Road down to Ocean Boulevard except on surface, and there is no paved surface drainage type improvements that have ever been made. So we, at the request of the City Council, we sent these surveys out. We sent a total of 647 surveys. There are 418 individual parcels. We used a company called Sloco Data. They compile mailing lists for government agencies, and they came up with the 647 survey requests. They screened it in two different ways. Some of the properties got actually two of the surveys, but we weeded through everything and made sure that everybody that voted on it was a owner of the property, and also they only voted once per assessor parcel number. Of those 418 individual parcels, we received 231 completed surveys with a total of 55 owners voting yes and 176 voting no. I have a breakdown in the agenda report on a street-by-street breakdown. On Cuyama, there were 40 parcels. One voted yes, 17 no. Morrow, 47 parcels. There were two yes, 33 no. Overall, there were predominantly no votes. Castaic was the only street that was anywhere close to an even split. It was 15 yes and 19 no out of 60 different properties that were surveyed. Of the total number of 231, there were 55% of the 231 accounted for 55% of the total 418 individual parcels, and of those, only 13% voted no. I'm sorry, it voted yes.
Yes.
Yeah, so that made it 87% no overall. Some streets there were higher percentages and some were lower, but overall there were no streets that voted for the assessment district.
Okay, thank you. Any questions from
no
council before we move on to the public?
I have none, Mr. Mayor.
Okay.
No questions.
Open it up to the public. Anyone that wishes to discuss item 6B, please come forward. I do have one name here. Doug Mattson. Yes.
Yeah. I I'm Doug Matheson, 153 Palomar, and I don't think you said what the no and yes vote on Palomar was.
On Palomar, there were 53 properties that were surveyed. Three voted yes, and 30 voted no.
Okay, thank you.
I can go through this. Would you like me to go through?
If they needed to last.
Well, some people might want to know.
Okay. I mean, that's a
well. I'm willing to, get a lot of discussion going here. But when you take a look at this kind of a result,
pretty cut and dry.
Pretty cut and dry.
Yeah.
Again, I really have to just initially comment that I commend the council and the staff to even begin to look at this. As I pointed out to you in my letter that you might remember, and I happen to would like to thank Mr. Duncan for calling me and discussing it at length. There are some concerns. Number one, I think that streets are a basic function of government. It's kind of like everybody would agree that there's a good purpose for a lighthouse, but how do you charge for a lighthouse? Well, do you go out there and collect tolls every time a boat goes by? Well, government has certain functions, and one of them is to provide streets and perhaps fire and police. Parks might be, something that you could argue. But if you want me to pay for the street or my neighbors to pay for the street, that's fine. Just make it a private street, period. Close it off on both ends, and only the people, because on our particular street, Santa Fe is one of the loops for the store. Well, that's a well-traveled loop. If you're opening it up to the public, then the public should pay for it, not the individual owners. And I think that there's a number of concerns that we really have to address. Again, I go back to the basic premise, and that is I commend you for finally looking at this. However, you're asking the community of Shell Beach to pay for the sins of the past. When the trench was open, as I pointed out to Mr. Duncan, when the trench was open on Shell Beach Road, when they replaced the water line, that water line, and please correct me if anybody knows different, that water line was up to 2 and 3 feet below Shell Beach Road. Not the water line, but the original street. Mm-hmm. So that thing has just been overlaid, and then it's never been corrected properly, and now you go, hey, you guys pay for it. I don't think so. So that's why you're getting the overwhelming response to this kind of thing. And I really, again, commend you for doing that, but do you want us to pay for the lighthouse? Well, I don't know. Thank you again.
You make good points. Anybody else? All right, I'll close it at the moment, and we'll see what happens later on, okay? All right. Staff, anything? Have anything else to say before the council starts talking?
The only thing I would have to say is I did a rough estimate on the improvements for the streets. These would be surface improvements only to try to correct drainage and convey the drainage from Shell Beach Road down to Ocean Boulevard. It would not include sidewalks, any kind of streetlight systems. There's a lot of encroachments into the properties, into the right-of-way along all of these streets. And I tried to keep it simple and to the point. And the $10,000 per lot is a very rough estimate, trying to include all the different types of improvements that would be required.
Yeah, because it's something that is done in other cities where the homeowner does share in the cost in some manner. And I know there's been a lot of complaints in the past regarding the drainage and that kind of thing, and I thought this would be one method and that we could accomplish it. And I can see that property owners are not willing to do it. And I'm not sure it's something that the city could afford to do on its own. And I think those are things that we can discuss at budget time. And Arlene. I thank the staff for the hard work. Mm-hmm. I really do. Mm-hmm.
Arlene?
Well, with the guesstimated cost for this, I don't see where the city would get the money. So I think this was really a step in the right direction that Mayor Pro Tem Reese brought forth. But it was overwhelmingly no answer, no votes for all the streets. So we just can't go in that direction. And I'm throwing my hands up in the air. So what do we do? They need to be fixed. We all you can drive down there and you can see all of these streets need plenty of work. But the big question is, where do we get the funds?
Okay. When this issue first came up, and I do have to give a lot of acclimates to Marianne for jumping in there and doing what she did, actually.
Absolutely.
But I recall, and I was here, when Shell Beach was enticed into the city of Pismo Beach. And one of the promises that was made was that the city of Pismo Beach would take care of the streets of Shell Beach. Now, to me, a promise made is supposed to be a promise kept. Okay, just because it was a yesterday and just because we assume we don't have the money, that we are simply not going to do it. Now, there is a way of getting the money, and I'm going to talk about it the next item. But the thing is that to force people to pay for their way, if that's the case, then it becomes a private street. Okay? And I can't see having private streets in the city of Pismo Beach. These are streets that are used by everybody. Not only I use them, everybody here uses them, and people that come in here from everywhere can also use them and love to drive down Shell Beach Road. So, and I have absolutely no concern or bad feelings for the people that said, no, you made a promise, I want you to keep it. And I want to keep that promise that the city made at that time. So consequently, I can't see us going any further with this. There was actually a suggestion made that that perhaps the public would pay, the individuals would pay 3/4 of the cost, and then the city would pay 3/4 of the cost. If the people are willing to, in fact, come put money out of their pocket, I can't stop them. But to me,
literally capital funds put aside, if we wanted to buy a house, what do? We save a little, save a little, save a little. Guess what? Before you know it, you have a chunk of change. Now, if there's a schedule, and hopefully government looks from a long-term perspective, if we say, let's go into a 20-year plan, and every year we have to put away, and I don't care what it is, if within a 20-year period we have all 9 streets, or by that time it'll be 15 streets done, then incrementally take it at a piece at a time. I don't think if we're looking at how do we solve this problem today, we're not going to solve the problem today, and it's going to be overwhelming to the budget. So what I would suggest is if you continue down this mode, and I encourage you to do so, if you continue down this mode, please do it incrementally and fix the problem over a longer period of time. That's what I would suggest. Thank you.
Stay for the next item. Okay? All right. Any other discussion? Okay, come on up.
Tim Bittner, 800 Norma Drive. This is deja vu all over again. I think the council goes through this about every 10 years. I think just about that length of time it takes to forget what happened, and you know, then we start all over again. I've heard a lot of comments. Everybody in town pays for their own streets. You know, I live in Sea Country. We paid for our streets. We just paid for it a little differently. The builder put them in when he. But, you know, when he built the project, then he tacked it onto the price of our house, you know, and that's how streets normally get paid for. At some point, everybody will have to pay for a street because their streets are going to go bad. Cities kind of maintain streets, but rarely can cities afford to rebuild streets. Grover has a unique solution, and that is when somebody sells a house, before they can get back into that house, the new owner, you put in curbs and gutters, yeah. You know, and everybody has a solution as to how you solve this, but this is one of these things that like I said, when I was on the council 10 years ago, we talked about this. We went through the same thing. We actually got a few people to participate, and a couple of those streets actually got overlaid. But the streets are horrible. There's no base under them. You know, it's asphalt on sand. Anything you do to them short of completely tearing them up and, you know, starting from fresh like it was, you're building a new street, is probably a waste of time. And we talked about that the other night with the, you know, when do you determine a street's not worth keeping up? And but I think at some point, you know, this does have to be resolved. There does have to be some sort of a plan, because once every 10 years probably isn't adequate, and especially when there's no basic solution. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anybody else? Come on up.
Mr. Mayor and Council, my name is Chris Matheson, and I live at 153 Palomar in Shell Beach. And I'm thinking in a different way than some of the people before me are thinking. The money was a lot, but I'm thinking more. We've lived on in our house for almost 25 years, and our street is a really nice street. It's one of the widest streets in. And when people found out we lived there, everybody's like the UPS daily truck and the FedEx truck. I mean, they just fly down our street. And we have children on our street. We're getting more and more people with children. And also, there's a parking problem. Almost every house has three cars. And when you juggle in your driveway, you can't park in a row, because then the guy farthest in, everybody has to back out. So people are trying to park in such a way. And when they widen the streets, we're not going to have as much driveway. Across the street is a rental, and they've got four cars, and they're all parked facing in with the rear end out into the road, and there will be no place for them to park. And there's a lot of places on, so it'll be a major parking problem. But anyway, I just wanted to express that, so thank you.
Thank you.
Basically, I was done a few minutes ago, but, you know, when I bought my house in Shell Beach 24 years ago, I paid the owner, who maybe paid for that street, and I'm not the parking thing where these cars will be going this way instead of four of them headed in that sit 0.75% in their own property now are going to be going this way. If you just look at the streets that you put curbs and gutters on, there's a solid line of cars, just bumper to bumper. If you have company come over, they got to park a block away. This relieves some of that the way it is now, because you can park in like this. And I'm against the curb and gutters, but I think $200 to $300 a foot for curb and gutters is totally ridiculous. I went out and got some estimates for the curb and gutter, just curb and gutter, was $50 a foot high, $25 to $32 for the cement contractor, $13 to $15 for engineering and permits is what I got back. So that's $2,500 versus $10,000. And I think that, you know, I'm against it, but I wouldn't mind paying a portion. But I don't think that we should pay for curb and gutter and the street and drainage and everything else. It's just too much money. If you finance that, add a half to each one of those, and you're up to $15,000, and then $24,000 if you finance it. So that's it.
Thank you. Okay, anybody else?
Mr. Mayor.
As a property owner?
Yes, yeah, I'd like to exercise my right as a citizen of Pismo Beach. I had to stay out of the room until the discussion was over, with the city attorney tells me. Bill Rabinalt, 111 Morrow Avenue, actually. And, you know, there is a solution, and I'm pretty certain I know what the mayor is going to be bringing up, and I'm looking forward to participating in that discussion, because I think he was very wise in introducing it in the first place. But one of the things that we need to take a look at is that we are looking for the taxpayers and residents of today to, in fact, pay for something that is going to be used in the long term by the residents of tomorrow. And that's where I'm hoping that Mr. Eads is going to allow some flexibility in there to us, for us to make some discussion or have discussion with reference as to how mix of individuals and business and everything else. And I believe that's what the residents of Shell Beach want and need. But let's not take a divisive attitude. There are those out there that are saying, look at these people talking about Shell Beach. You know, there's three other quadrants of this city as well. Nobody's talking about my street down on Baker, you know, next to the Addy Street parking lot. Nobody's talking about James Way. But with long-term planning, and I believe that the plan that the mayor has come up with, I believe that we can do something very, very positive to that. I want everybody to know that I voted no on the curb gutters and sidewalk issue as it came to my residence. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. Okay, anybody else?
Don Day, 101 Park Place, Pismo Beach. I think what Bill was grasping for is we need a vision for Shell Beach before we do anything to it, and then we could go forward.
Thank you,
Don. I thought he had to be in the back. One of the things the council needs to be cognizant of, I think, is years ago, the village of Shell Beach was funky, whatever you want to call it, but it was also inexpensive. But you paid a lesser price because of some of the, I don't know that I want to call them disadvantages, but some of the amenities that you didn't have. It wasn't a fully developed street. It didn't have curbs and gutters. But you got a nice home at a much lower price, and for years, It was a value. I can't say that anymore now, but people that have owned the home for 25 to 50 years down there have a gold mine. It's maybe what we have to do is look at somehow when those people remodel, or and it's happening an awful lot now, is that as they do in Grover, is that perhaps they have to come out and do to the center line of the street. But I've heard many times in the past where the people that live down there do not want curb and gutters. They like what they have. So maybe what we need to do is evaluate what the will of the people is down there, and perhaps it's only improve the street. Maybe it's an A-curb or something just to control the runoff down the street and try to maintain the character that it has, because it is different. It is unique, and it's really a nice place to live. And we could make it another community. We could pave everything and concrete the rest of it, but it would change the entire character of it. And I think we want to be cognizant of taking a wrong step that would be very hard to correct later. Thank you.
You are so right. Close it. All right. It's now up to the council.
What action is there? There isn't any. I think we can move ahead.
We can move on.
Yeah.
Okay. Do we even need to take a vote?
No.
All right. Thank you very much, Scott. For you people that came over. You might be interested in what's going to happen at the next agenda item. So let's get back to 6A then.
Okay. Can't we do Schaefer Lane first?
What?
We need to do that, I think.
Do we have Schaefer Lane?
Yeah, because yeah, that's you know, all the
oh, that's easy.
Firemen are here.
Let's get the firemen out of here. Put them back to work.
Could we move 6C up now?
Okay, if you promise that you're going to do it in 5 minutes.
There he is.
It may take a little longer.
Situation with Schaefer Lane, which is in Pismo Heights, of a substandard roadway that is a two-way roadway that has parking on it. The actual road easement does not even allow for one-way with parking on it. So what we have before you tonight is a resolution for your council to take under consideration to fix that problem. And we really have two choices, and that is to, by council policy, to continue an illegal situation or to change. And we know change is difficult. We've been approached by members of the community, the neighborhood, and Mike Harkness, the battalion chief, has spent some time with them. And I'd like to ask him to come up and present his findings to you and what the diagram up on the wall over here depicts as far as what Schaefer Lane is all about and what we offer to you as a solution to fix an existing illegal problem and come up with the best possible solution under the circumstances.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, as the city manager indicated, we're bringing forth a recommendation tonight to adopt a resolution designating Schaefer as one-way street. This would be from Baxter down to Bay Streets. Although the fire department brings this resolution forward to you tonight, it comes at the recommendation of two of your traffic committees that exist within the city. First is the Traffic Safety Advisory Committee, which is made up of your mid-management from different departments. Their recommendation was to convert Schaefer to a one-way street. They moved that recommendation up to the Traffic Safety Committee, which is made up of your department heads. They agreed with that recommendation and passed it to us. So we come to you tonight at the direction of those two committees. The current fire code calls for 24 feet for a two-way street before you allow parking. Schaefer Lane varies between 18 and 22 feet. So if we apply your council-approved fire code to that street today, no parking at all would exist on that street. We have an overhead up here that shows, and is in your package, and some of the members of the public have it, that shows the varying widths of the street. That's done from an aerial photo with GPS measurements, so I want to make it clear that that's not an exact engineering study. This is varies within 1 or 2 feet. And what that clearly shows is that we don't have a full 24 feet. So our recommendation is that we convert the street to a one-way street where there's a 12-foot traffic lane and 8 feet for a full 20 feet. We would have access for fire equipment and then have an additional 8 feet for parking. That doesn't exist on the whole street. There are some opportunities for parking where 20 feet exists, and any new development would be required to have that 20 feet as well. So there would be some future parking. The parked cars right now today significantly inhibit the access for fire equipment. We've got one slide here. I provided council with a packet earlier in the month that showed a number of slides. But this is just one spot on Schaefer Lane where we physically could not pass by a car that that was parked on the street. We went up and visited with the neighbors a couple weeks ago. Some of them elected to ride down the street in the fire engine. We were giving rides down just to display the problem. From the top of the street to the bottom of the street, it took us more than 5 minutes for the fire engine to successfully negotiate. So that's not the time it takes to get to your house from the fire station. That's just to traverse one end of the street to the other. So when seconds count in a medical or a fire emergency, obviously that's just not acceptable. So what we're bringing for you tonight is two options. It's not our normal protocol to ram vehicles out of the way. Given a extreme situation, we would certainly do whatever we needed to do to save a life.
Well, because that's what I would expect. I mean, that's what I was hoping you were going to say.
Before we'd run a vehicle out of the way, I'm sure we'd grab whatever equipment we needed or fire hose we needed and probably progress past it. But there's a built-in delay to do that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay. Let me open it to the public. Anyone wishes to talk about this?
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. Mark Schmidt, 951 Schaefer Lane. I was one of the residents that met with the fire department a couple of weeks ago, and I applaud them for coming out and speaking with the residents. Being in the fire service myself, I totally understand issues of access and response times, and I believe the fire department actually would have been remiss had they not brought this to our attention collectively. My issue is not with the fire department's concerns. It's more a matter of an issue with the city. At some point in our history, the city elected to dedicate this street, to dedicate Schaefer Lane, and incorporate it into the city's road system, presumably with the understanding that it's a substandard street. I guess what I'm standing up here asking or looking for is some kind of assurance that the resolve to this problem is not going to be placed on the backs of the residents, that I believe that the city bears some kind of responsibility for fixing a condition, being that they dedicated the street into the city system. I think, you know, there's all kinds of suggestions that we talked about when we met with the fire department. Parking is a huge issue on Schaefer Lane. I don't think there's anybody that has a single car. There are too many residents, too many vehicles to restrict parking on that street. So I don't really think that that's a viable option. So we either widen the street so that we do have adequate parking, or I'm going to present another option, and I think it's something we all ought to think about, It's something we did discuss with the fire department a couple weeks ago when we met with them, and that is the option of simply doing nothing. Many of us move to the street understanding that it's substandard. We understand there's a risk, there's an access problem, there's a response delay. But I kind of draw an analogy to somebody who moves to the country. People move to the country understanding that they're going to have a delay in emergency services, and they're willing to accept that because they enjoy living in the country. I think many of us moved to the street understanding that there was going to be an issue with access by the fire department. And I think knowing that, many of us agreed to accept that risk. And I think that acceptable risk is an acceptable option. So just another option to think about as we try to work through this problem. And again, thanks to the fire department for bringing this to everybody's attention.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anybody else?
Out of Schaefer Lane. The only time I drive down Schaefer Lane is if I absolutely have to, because it's always with a certain amount of difficulty. And if any other vehicle is parked in front of our house, it's a lot of maneuvering just to get into my driveway. So obviously, I'm opposed to a one-way lane. If the city feels that this is such a problem, then I think that they should make the lane into a street and widen the road to provide two-way traffic. That I would be in favor of. But please keep in mind, if a one-way lane is approved, then I need to know who will be responsible for tearing out the front of my house to make a new approach. Because I have no other way to get into my house but the downhill way. I don't think it should be me to have to pay for it, because I did what I was asked to do in the first place with a lot of reservations about it. Please take in consideration my situation when making this decision. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Hi, my name's Don. My name's Don Jones. My wife, Karen. We moved to 931 Schaefer Lane approximately 6 years ago. We've always been aware that there's been a narrow road going into Schaefer Lane. Our neighbors, we all kind of work together as far as our parking, and I realize there is a narrow road situation that probably has to be solved somehow. In our case, I don't know that this map, there was something said about this is just, it's going to be resurveyed. I'm not too sure that this map is correct. I'm hoping that this map is correct, but I'd like to deal with the issue of the no parking in on Schaefer Lane. If in front of my house, if we have to have 20 feet and I don't have 20 feet, that means that I can't park in front of my house. I also have a vehicle that I would have to park somewhere else. I don't know where that would be. In Pismo, I also have a very large family that visits me almost every weekend. They like to come to the beach, have grandkids and friends that like to come over and see us. Unfortunately, that would be no longer. Other than that, I'd have to go pick them up somehow and bring them to my house. I don't think that's right. The city created the road, and I think, like Mark said it, I agree with Mark in many ways. The road has been there when we moved there. It was built by contractors at little pieces at a time, if I understand how the road was put in. They added to that road as they went. And people that have been around Pismo Beach a long time probably know that part of that road, I think, was paved and part of it was dirt at one time. Mm-hmm. But it is a city street. And I find out that there's going to be a lot of unhappy people up there if they say that we cannot park in front of our house or have friends and family come. Anyway, appreciate you listening.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Anyone else?
Mayor, City Council. Wally Ekdahl, 921 Schaefer Lane. Interesting that Don brought up the map measurements. May or may not be accurate. I took a tape measure and actually went out and measured a lot of these points that are here, and these measurements are very generous by a couple of feet over what you actually tape. However, again, this road, as it shows in the picture, in a lot of areas is just a dirt slope. So where is the line? We don't know. But if you do look at this map, and I understand that you all have one of these, that you could, okay? Well, if you look at it, and if you look at Wadsworth, nice, generous street, look at Longview. When it makes a left, it goes downhill. It gets a little narrow there. Compare that width to Schaefer. Look at Hanford. Compare that width to Schaefer. It's even narrower. Look at Baxter. Again, very narrow. Bay Street, at least half of Bay Street is just as narrow as Schaefer. Same situation, two-way traffic, parking on the street. Now, that is a little community that's isolated there, and that's what the allure was to the people that, like myself and my wife, that moved there. We could have picked anywhere in Pismo, but we chose that because of the lifestyle that these people enjoy. Seeing that it's being viewed as a illegal street would lead me to believe then, that's pretty strong words, that something has to be done. And if that's the case, I would suggest I know of at least 12 other streets besides these that are also illegal streets. We discussed this with the fire department. They didn't indicate they were prepared to do anything at the time. Another discussion was what prompted this. As long as their history, their files go back, there's no incident where the delay caused a problem. As far back as their records go, that's just what they told us. We're constructing a house there. We've had a 20-ton crane up there multiple times and didn't block traffic. He was there all day, did his work, didn't block traffic. And to be honest, that driver is a young kid that's not trained in emergency response driving, which I would assume our firemen are. He didn't have a problem. The one picture they showed was right at the bottom of Schaefer Lane where that nice palm tree is, right above the house that's got 28 written on it. You can see that's a dirt area, and that is the narrowest part, very narrow. So that's the worst example. And, yes, that's a tight fit. But it's a dirt slope angled dirt there. I mean, your response, you wouldn't even have to hit the car. You could just drive over the bank and get around it. So that doesn't fly with me. We were told that what prompted this was development above this lower house, causing increased traffic onto Schaefer. If that's the case, then I would assume that the developer should pay the cost that it may take to widen the street slightly.
Can you summarize it, please? Your okay. time is really up.
Okay, yes, thank you. Well, in closing, you do have some options, the least of which I would hope would not involve taking off parking off the street. It's too steep of a street for people to walk to if they park in front of someone else's house. We could widen it. You could widen it a couple feet.
The approximate 24 or 20-foot wide street in front of these four lots, I purchased lot 4 and built my existing home, and it was there that the street ended. Now, it came up Bay Street, very narrow. Then it came up from Bay Street. Now it goes down, but there's a wide area. When I finished building my home, the street ended and was that way until in the early 1990s there was excess dirt from a building project and was used as a base to create a roadway that joined together where Mr. Northcote had come down and where the little narrow 10-foot road had come up, joining at both ends of Schaefer Lane and creating a complete roadway. It should be noted there are three totally blind curves on this short roadway. I drive it 3 and 4 times every day. I understand from listening to the police, the fire department, and I too want to say thanks for the men that came up with the vehicle to talk to us about our problem that we have. I understand there is no record at the Pismo Beach Police Department of any traffic collision to date. However, there are many near collisions that have occurred and continue to put concern in the hearts of many motorists. because the road is so narrow at its lowest point. And further, it must be carefully negotiated where cars are parked at the approximate 20-foot width. On Sunday, when the firemen came with the fire engine, it took them 5 minutes to go down. The time prior to that, it took the fire engine 7 minutes to negotiate from Baxter down to Bay. Thankfully, when that vehicle from the fire department went down, there was not a car coming up from Bay Street, coming up the street. If it had been coming and the person driving was somewhat reckless, as from time to time it has been, there could have been a serious problem with the fire truck going down. I've been going down when the garbage truck was coming up. It creates a serious problem. Schaefer Lane has never been engineered to be a two-way traffic. The trash trucks...
Could you finish your sentence, please?
Schaefer Lane is not engineered to be two-way traffic, period. Thank you, sir. The trash trucks and the fire engines rarely to make it
you.
Safe. Though the area is only 10 feet wide. As one drives Schaefer Lane, as I do 3-4 times a day, it would seem to me that we would have room to park. If it's 19 feet and 8 inches or 19 feet and 7 inches, there should be leeway for that, so there would still be parking. But it seems to me that to have a one-way
car approach into a 3-car driveway that I have and also a 3-car garage, this design makes it nearly impossible for me to turn into my driveway from the uphill side. And I have a couple photos here that I'd like to show you on that. The fire department now feels a need to change this into a one-way street, and I applaud their concern, but they've given us photos showing their engine coming down, and the one that was on the screen is the tightest one. And that is in a situation, it shows a section of Schaefer Lane that predates the 45 years that I've been in this town and is probably 8 feet to 10 feet wide in that situation. That section is going to be slated for new development sometime in the future, and some upgrades will have to be done. So the responsibility should be addressed at that time with that developer and that development. Again, like everyone else has said here, I personally do not feel that anyone moved into this street with blinders on. You know, this is a unique situation, and most of the residents I've spoken with seems like the lane, they like it the way it is. So Schaefer Lane, again, is not the only non-conforming patch of asphalt in the city, and changing this into a one-way will alter the traffic flow in a negative way you may not have considered. For example, the garbage collection route, the postal carrier's route, etc. Again, let's look at above that. Have the Hanford residents been advised of all the traffic flow now that will be routed in front of their homes, and how much effect is that going to have in the longevity of the now aging Hanford Street? You know, eliminating the small amount of parking available to the Schaefer Lane residents and turning a two-way into a one-way will have a definite negative effect on all our property values by losing our parking. In closing, I feel that there are only two solutions. And number one is leave it the way it is. Number two, invoke eminent domain, widen the street, make it conform, create the needed width, parking, and safety access. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Anybody else?
Honorable Mayor, members of Council, Tony Spinelli, Pismo Beach. I have an issue with this, and I, too, feel for the people on Schaefer Lane, because I have a lot that's a half acre down on the end of Bakersfield Street. Now, if you go down Bakersfield Street towards Price Canyon Road, it narrows to about, I don't even think it's 18 feet wide. And if you pass a one-way solution for these folks here, you might as well go up in those heights and pass them for all the streets. And I have an issue with that because you're setting a precedent with this one street. You know, I think that, and I applaud the fire department for doing their job, but the city has been laid out for many years the way it is, and we have substandard streets in this town. And by picking on one street, you better look at the whole city first before you make your decision tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? Okay, I'm going to close it, bring it back to council. All right. Rudy.
I also built a home up there. I probably built the fourth home that was built on that street to the people living there.
Marianne.
Well, when the fire department came up with this, I thought it was a wonderful idea. I thought one-way street, that answers the problem because it's a tight squeeze coming up and down that. But now that I'm listening to everybody along the street, I think what Rudy said is probably true. The major problem is finding a place to park. And then listening to the one couple who's got their driveway at a different angle, I don't know what you would do to get into your driveway. I think you've got room in your driveway to park more than one car, which is an advantage, but getting into it the opposite way would be just difficult. I do like the idea of making it a one-way street, but I think that we're causing more problems than we're resolving, so I, too, would have to change my mind on that. I'm sorry. Fire department is doing their job. It is a concern. You know, your safety is in jeopardy to some extent by having two-way traffic, but I have to consider the other problems also.
Okay. Arlene?
Well, when I read the staff report, I thought it was pretty cut and dry. It just seemed very simple, that no other way. However, as a representative of the people, I'm listening to all these persons that live on Schaefer Lane, and they're opposed, or a number of them are opposed to a one-way street. Illegal street, if it's the fire code and emergencies, Councilmember Rabinall talked about, if you couldn't maneuver the fire truck through, would you ram a vehicle? But then what I thought of immediately, what if the person that called in was an alarmist? And now we've wrecked our fire truck. So I don't know if that's even a consideration. And then now I want to make sure that I understand that if it's a one-way street, there's still no parking.
I'd like to address two questions that you've brought up. If it's a one-way street and there are 20-foot areas, then that allows us a 12-foot one-way traffic lane and parking. So if it's a one-way street, there are going to be opportunities for parking. And I would like to reemphasize that what we have is an aerial photo with GPS measurements. This is not an engineering study, and I'm sure you're correct that these are approximate measurements. So, and I want you to think that this is an engineering study. It's not. We would need the folks from engineering to go out and actually show us, you know, tape measurements and radius of turns and everything else that would be involved. However, there will be opportunities for parking on the current street where there are 20-foot widths, and there will certainly be opportunities when new development exists because they'll be required to have the full 20 feet. If council chooses not to pass this resolution, there will not be any parking on Schaefer Lane because okay. It's less than 24 feet, and your council-adopted fire code will not allow for any parking. So the options before you tonight are, and you know, the fire department well recognizes that, you know, anything that takes place will be an inconvenience to the neighbors up there. It's really a policy decision as to what you think is the lesser of two evils. Do we make an inconvenience of a one-way street that allows for some parking? 100% no parking if you don't adopt the resolution.
Okay. Well, I don't think anyone wants that either because everyone that spoke that was opposed to it being one way also were more opposed to their family not being able to park. And
absolutely. We recognize that there's no simple answers. Yeah. The situation that we find ourselves in is we have a duty to act. We come before you tonight and say we've identified a problem, we've got a street, right, and a fire engine can't get down in a reasonable amount of time to provide emergency services. We can't in good conscience not come to you and say, we've got an illegal street, we've got an unsafe situation, and we can't protect the residents.
Well, on the fiscal impact, it says expense for the purchase of an installation of signage. So I would assume that signage wouldn't be that costly. So what I would like to see, and I hope it would kind of satisfy most of the persons that spoke this evening, is maybe a temporary trial basis, and then maybe they could get the feel of maybe it isn't that bad. And then it also they're all shaking their heads no, but it would also be satisfy the safety issue up there. Because I think one gentleman said, oh, I think we have accepted the risk until the risk happens. Then the risk lays back on the city. So I would be in favor of doing it on a temporary basis.
Can I ask Mike a question?
Just a second. Okay. Are you all finished?
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Thank you.
Okay. Bill?
You know, they don't pay us enough money. Honest to goodness. You know, you got the good reverend who I have a lot of regard for that thinks a one-way street would be okay. I've got others of you out there that think it is not going to work. I've got a fire department that's telling me if you don't do what needs to be done, we're going to close it down to all parking. It's a very, very difficult position for council to be in, as you can well imagine. My concern is, however, that I don't believe, and you can correct me, Mike, if I'm wrong, I do not believe that this is the only street that falls into that category up there. And what I'm concerned about is the long-term effect of that entire area because of a, and I know it's not an arbitrary decision, but because of a decision being made to enact this type of a resolution on one street, do you believe that there is no need for this type of resolve on other streets?
We have a city-adopted fire code. As we identify areas that don't meet that code, we'll bring them to council.
You will.
This is probably the most glaring safety issue for us in terms of access. There are other substandard width and substandard streets in the city. This is the one that has the most concern for us. Obviously, we're not going to bring them all to you in one night.
Right.
And we have developers that are ready to that are in the permit process. We need to give them direction.
And notwithstanding the cost.
Notwithstanding
right.
the cost, no, you could build a 24-foot roadway.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Because, and I'm hoping that you can still pick me up on the microphones, is this not, in fact, down here city-owned property?
No, one lot's gone, I think. Let's see.
Well, I know all of this is city-owned property over here, but I'm wondering about this area up in here, if that's city-owned property.
It is not. It is a small portion, a small strip that's city-owned, but it's has to be maintained for a geological. It is a geological. I'm trying to think of the name of it. It's a rock outcropping that we're required by the general plan to maintain.
Because where I'm going with this is that would be my first option is to see about widening that to the 24-foot width. And I understand that cost is going to be an issue, a tremendous issue. I don't know if the residents are willing to participate, if the residents feel that it's all a city's responsibility, because as one gentleman said, the city adopted that as a public thoroughfare. I'm hoping that we have explored and will explore all of the options. Now, do you have a rebuttal to that?
Just a clarification. 24 feet will give you the required two-way street. Still doesn't allow for parking. You would need an additional 8 feet on top of that. It's a 12-foot traffic lane in each direction plus parking. So a 20-foot one-way street gives you a 12-foot traffic lane plus 8 feet of parking.
My street in Shell Beach is not that wide.
That's the next street they're going to get. Bill, don't you see? Don't you see what's happening? Don't you see what's happening?
Well, you know, I'll tell you. It's I wished I could. I wish that I lived on that street so I could step down. No, I don't. I don't mind making these tough decisions at all. But it is a very thoughtful process that must be gone through, because as Arlene very rightfully said, we are nothing more than representatives of the people. So therefore, we need to take all of that into consideration. And I am scared to death, quite frankly, that the fire department is going to come in and say, that's it. If you don't adopt this resolution, that's it. And that is exactly what you've told us.
Well, I guess I'd like to make sure that we're clear that our purpose tonight is not to come in and say that we're going to uphold some obscure fire resolution.
Oh, right, I understand
our
that.
Our purpose tonight is to come in and say we have an unsafe situation.
I'm glad
we
you
have
said
a street
that. Right.
That we cannot
because
get
earlier,
down.
Earlier you in fact did intimate that you were going to close it down.
Yeah.
Okay, that was the only option, and I don't believe that because this council makes this decision, not the fire department.
We have a legal responsibility to yes. enforce the fire code that the council has adopted.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Mr.
Mayor,
that's all I all finished? Okay, yeah. Great.
And that's
I
one
have,
thing, Mr.
Okay.
Mayor, that...
if I might address that's the catalyst... the last straw, if you will, that caused this issue to come before council, is there are a couple of parcels of land being developed that we have a planning permit process that requires us to require that developer to dedicate an easement. The width of that easement is predicated on the width of this roadway. We are holding gotcha. Their process up until we come to a conclusion on what width of dedication of city right-of-way has to be made. It's currently a 20-foot right-of-way to make us a two-lane street with parking. We're in the 30-plus feet of right-of-way that has to be dedicated. So we're taking more property from this citizen if we make it a two-way street. It'll be a two-way street for 75 feet or so of their frontage, and the rest of it won't be. The issue of closing, Mr. Mayor, the issue of closing the street, you have a fire code that you've entrusted me to enforce for you, and I have a duty to do that. I don't get to interpret that law. I don't get to say, well, it applies here and it doesn't apply here. I have to enforce it as it is written. And that's what the definition of the conundrum that I mentioned when I came before you. We have a conundrum here. People want to park there. We'd like them to park there. The only way we see available for them to do that is to make us a one-way street and make it legal to park within the existing codes. The only option is for the council to direct us to come back and modify that code to allow a street that is currently illegal by definition by the fire code to continue to exist in a non-conforming method. And we would have to single the street out and identify it as a legal non-conforming street. I will say this. In 1991, I was on the Oakland Hills fire, and I saw 24 good citizens die on streets just like this. So, and they thought it was wonderful, too, in the Oakland Hills. Nice, lovely, one-way streets that cars could not pass each other. I don't mean to say that extremist. I've been there. I've seen it. And it's not pretty when it happens. So nobody wants change. I understand how complicated change is. It just disrupts your life. But we're trying to come up with a solution that works for the citizens, that works for the emergency services, works for the council, works for everybody. And we have this issue of moving forward on these two permits is to determine the width of property they give to the citizens of the city, and then we can move that on. I don't want to bring a difficult situation to you. I know how complicated this is. We didn't do this lightly. It's gotten to the point where if we don't act, if I don't act, then I'm disregarding my public duty to you to not bring this to your attention. So, again, I bring you a conundrum. Unfortunately, I didn't bring you a perfect solution because we couldn't find that perfect solution.
Thank you. The problem that I have with your solution is that you came up with only one solution, and that is the real problem. The issue has evolved over time, and my recommendation to the council is that we not use a sledgehammer at this point so as to make this type of a solution on this street, because now this sledgehammer is going to continue on to many, many other streets in this city. My recommendation is that we, in fact, take this problem to our put a committee together that will in fact be looking at the true traffic and the true problems and come up with a really reasonable solution that is not only workable but doable, and how to fund it so that we can, in fact, mad at us for doing something that we think is the right thing to do. But there is a solution here. And I'm afraid that the solution that we were handed tonight is not the solution that I am willing to adhere to. When I see that all of a sudden it's all or nothing, and that's not what I can see. You know, if, for example, we had a one-way street and we were able to park a car on one side all the way through, that would be perhaps a good alternative way of making it happen. And if, by golly, if we in fact have to get a piece of property or something like this so as to widen the street, then we should have the guts to do it at that time. But I'm just afraid that we're overdoing it.
Mr. Mayor, and I understand what you're saying, but I think what I did hear is that we're holding up one piece of property from being developed based on our decision-making process. Now, can we not require that one piece of property to do what it should do in terms of widening that stretch?
You know, we've been holding another piece of property for 17 years. We can certainly hold this a little bit of time to come up with a reasonable solution.
And I agree with that.
Okay.
It is a hardship for people, too.
So, is there any other discussion here? Because
I'm concerned about liability. When the chief comes up to me and he says, look, I was in Oakland. I saw these homes built, burned down. This is an illegal street, and now a fire crops out. The city is now going to be liable for all of that up there. Absolutely. That concerns me greatly.
The city's always liable.
Well, it's
the thing. What I'm saying is that we're not going to do it. We need to have time to come up with some real analysis. You know, when questions were asked, how much of the street is not big enough?
Yeah.
Nobody could come up with a real answer to that. So we honestly do not have enough data.
Get some engineering stuff in there.
Give us some real information.
Well, Mr. Mayor, if I may, maybe we could bring it back to the next council meeting. I don't want this to be dragging out because we're holding up someone building. Plus, it's a safety issue. I don't think we should drag this out. So if the council does, in fact, want it to come back to a future meeting, I'd like to see it for the next meeting, not...
Okay. We have...
Excuse me.
Okay. I'm only going to allow two people to talk, and that's it. Okay? Come on.
I hope I'm one of them.
Tony Spinelli. You know, I'm looking for a solution here because I'll tell you, this is a major issue. I neglected to say it. There's only one way in and one way out of my half acre. You know, and with that, I have a real concern here. Now, you got people back here that have their life's earnings into their houses up on the hill. I don't care how much they're worth. They still have a lot to lose up here. You know, and I'm sure they're concerned too. But I think, you know, I have family that has acreage in Arroyo Grande that have developed out, and the fire department made them put a fire extinguisher within so many feet of their house. Threatening you by telling you they got an unsafe situation, give us a solution other than telling us that you're going to have a one-way street and no parking. I would have thought more of these guys tonight, and I respect all of them, but I would have thought more of them if they would have said, you know what, we got about three solutions here. But don't cram it down my throat that you're going to take my street, shut it off, and going to have no parking. I have an issue with that. Thank you.
Okay. Last person.
I do. Mark Schmidt. I'll keep this brief. The Uniform Fire Code is a black and white document. But that doesn't mean that the interpretation applied to that code cannot satisfy the intent of that code. So, you know, just because it's printed in black and white, I mean, we do it all the time when we interpret the fire code. We work with business owners to come up with a solution that satisfies the intent of that code. You know, if we took it, you know, the black and white print
You know, half the businesses in the city would be, you know, shut down. So I think there's some interpretation that needs to apply to the black and white version of the fire code and how it applies to this particular situation. The chief mentioned it also, this existing nonconforming. We've all heard that term, and it means exactly that. There's certain conditions that exist in our city that that were pre-code that that don't satisfy the code the way it's written now. But we allow it when we put some safety measures into place that satisfy the intent of the code, and we allow those existing non-conforming things to exist. And this is kind of a similar situation that we have here on Schaefer Lane. So I'm here to tell you that if we restrict any parking on Schaefer Lane, somebody is going to have to go park on another street. One of my vehicles, I have to park in front of one of the only existing vacant lots that's left on that street. The neighbors are very good about working with each other. When they have a party or something along those lines, and so we make it happen, we make it work. But
we need to be invited to one of those parties so we can see how you do that.
Well, you know, wouldn't you know it? The fireman, I got a fire hydrant right in front of my house, and so it removes one of my parking places. So I think there's a solution out there, but I think we all need to work
Help
together
us.
and try to figure out what that is. Thank you.
Okay. No, I said only two, and I'm going to stick with it. Okay, we have to get out of here before 2:00 this morning. All right. What time is it anyway? I can't tell.
We need to table this or bring it back next time.
Well, I agree with you.
All right. Let's go ahead and give it back to staff so as they can review this thing here, come up with good solutions, not a big hammer. Give us some real engineering data so that a better solution can be made. And actually, we want to be able to look at other problems that we are causing by having made a decision on this one street. We certainly don't want Bill to have to move out of his house because
my street's too narrow.
Okay.
Keep Bill is willing to support me.
All right.
Well,
yeah, I agree.
I mean,
I agree as well.
What's really interesting is that Bill and I have been asking for this information for 4 years.
I know.
Okay, and this is finally coming out. That's right. Yeah. 4 years ago, when we first came on board, we started asking for this data.
We did.
Okay, and finally, we have a city manager that listens, and city manager that's giving us this data that we want. Okay, now I don't mind waiting a little bit longer, but let me tell you, we've been waiting a long time.
Yeah.
Well, I will say one thing. It was wonderful information. It had everything in it we could ever ask for. And it was worth 4 units of college credits. Because I got so much information out of it. I really did.
Oh, absolutely.
The only problem with that information is that all it gave you was information that didn't give you a solution.
Well, the solutions are pretty obvious that are in it. You have to be willing to bite the bullet and go to the community and ask if you can raise whatever.
Mr. Mayor and Council, if I could, maybe it would be best if, it's already 10:00 here, and this is a pretty substantial business item here that we're talking about, this five-year forecast, fiscal forecast for the city, and then revenue options to solve some of the problems that you've all talked about in the past.
Might even be a workshop.
That's precisely what I was going to suggest.
So,
or November 3rd,
Mr.
for sure.
Yeah, Mr. Statler's under contract to us, so I can work with him and find out when he would be available to come and brief us again, and we could defer this to another time and make it business item number one, and maybe actually do it number
6A,
one.
6A, right.
Because
a workshop.
It is going to require some thought, and it's pretty substantial.
Yeah.
It's going to require for the council, the next council, to in fact be dedicated to solving the problem.
Yeah. Exactly.
Because this problem hasn't been acknowledged and allowed to continue to perpetuate.
Correct.
So, am I understanding that you don't want to hear it this time?
I think it is late. It's going to take a lot of
It takes a lot of brain power. I mean, this is so important.
May I make one point, Mr. Mayor?
Okay. Stand up, quick. I know.
When the council is reelected and takes office, I think it's on December 3rd, early in December, there will be at least one person who's not here now sitting up there.
Yes.
At least one, maybe two.
Maybe two.
As long-term ramifications of this item 6A, to me, require that all those who are going to be implementing it initially be involved in the decision.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point, actually.
As somebody that waited all night to do this and plus researched for 2 days here, sitting on the beach reading this gentleman's program
here,
this is not the forum to be doing this in. I mean, he'd get a
It was on the agenda, and you haven't crossed it off the agenda yet.
You're
and
right.
A lot of people like those who
This
came.
Is our meeting.
Yes, it
Go
is
ahead.
Your meeting. Thank you, Merrill Lee Hyman. Mr. Mayor, if you do put this in a larger forum, a workshop-type discussion, this report is quite extensive, but it has a big hole in it, and it acknowledges it right up front. And the whole is that the impact fees and that study are not included. This has been brought before you for 2-3 years now, that we are now going on 14 years where these fees have not been adjusted over time. We are looking at major development and costs for capital improvement, and that's a major source of funds. A lot of the revenue sources in this study are the same pocket, the taxpayers, other than TOT. It's just calling it by another name, but it's all the same people reaching in and putting that money out there for the extra revenue you want. Developer fees, the impact fees, are not the same pocket. So I think that really should be included in this whole look at what we have. The other is this plan leaves out all of the issues that came up this evening, plus others that you have identified. He's taken the study just takes maintenance of what we have now. Looks like we can't afford having a city, but doesn't solve widen all our narrow streets. It doesn't look at building a new fire station and the fees for that. There's a whole lot of areas that are left out, so that it's not just $1.25 million to sustain what we have at present. It's more like the $4 million a year to sustain and do the necessary improvements to streets and all the rest, and parks and all the rest. So I think it needs to be broadened a little more, not just this study. It's not big enough for yet. Thank you.
That's the reason why I said that this is just the embryonic stage of this thing here. It only gives us doesn't even begin to give us the tools, really, to do a job. And so there is another big part of this that needs to be done. And the other part that needs to be done is, you know, has to be taken on by the next council.
Yep.
The next council has to be able to have real meetings that are going to be forums where they're going to be discussing the real issues, and how are they going to achieve getting the money? Because without money, you can't do anything.
Mr. Mayor?
And that's really it.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
I hear what you're saying, but basically what they're trying to do is give us the information to work with. So they're trying to present that initially. So, and then it may take another meeting of really deciding
or three or four
where we're going.
Yeah.
So, but at least they're giving us information to work with. They can't very well, I think, come up with a solution without us cogitating it. So yes, we need to delay it. I think Mary Lee had a good point that there's another part to this too.
Well, if you read this to what the next council needs to do in order to make it happen,
and Mr. Mayor, why as suggested, a special meeting would be just wonderful before we actually had to vote on it.
If I could offer you a few observations, probably to launch this at 10:15 tonight is probably not a great idea when you still have other items on your agenda. And the world is not going to change radically in terms of the results of this forecast if it's deferred for a couple of weeks. I would offer this, you know, study session format's probably a good idea. In terms of the scope of the study, which some of the people mentioned about, well, what about the new facilities we want to do? What about the things that are driven by new development? The only observation I would offer you is there's only one way to eat an elephant, and that's one bite at a time. This has a relatively narrow focus of what's our ability to do those new initiatives if we want to maintain current service levels and if we want to adequately maintain what we already have. To take that to the next step, well, what about all the other cool things we want to do? You have to articulate what those are first, and you're not going to do that in the next week or two. In terms of new development, it absolutely doesn't look at impact fees, which is a different study you have going on, but that's why the kinds of things that this forecast talks about funding would not be the kinds of things that new development would be responsible for doing. That's another piece. So I guess I would sort of argue that it is okay to take on this first piece, and maybe that was the mayor's point about the embryonic stage. I think it is totally appropriate to take on this stage as the first step of many that you're going to have to take about how you want to achieve, you know, the deepest goals and aspirations of the Pismo Beach community. But I do think you can take this study on its own merits, what its results are, and it may well be a good idea after 10 o'clock to defer that to a different date. But I wouldn't suggest that you defer consideration of this until you have lots more information about things that are not in the work scope of this study, because, quite frankly, everything is connected to everything else, and before you're done, you have to ask yourself, what's the meaning of life? What happens when I die? Why was I born? Mm-hmm. There has to be questions you can answer, you know, more concretely before you get to that. So I would argue I think there is a place for just the scope that this is for the council to consider. That's probably not tonight.
You know, I thought I had coined the word, the discussion there, that how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time? I've been talking about that with my students for years, and all of a sudden you used my words.
Okay. Are you available, though, to come back?
Well, depends.
Of course I will come back. I'll need to discuss compensation issues with the city manager. But I'm
Do
sure
we really need him?
I think the answer is, I think I could safely say the answer is yes. You know, there's obviously some people from the community that are interested in the results. The council themselves, obviously all of you are interested in this. Mm-hmm. And I just think you would probably be doing yourselves a disservice if you try to tackle that this evening. It's one of the case of best laid plans of mice and men. The hope was we would actually get to this at about 7:30 or 8 o'clock. But since it's after 10, you know, and you still have other items that you need to take care of, I think trying to find another time that maybe in more of a study session workshop format is probably the next best step. But I wouldn't suggest you defer it beyond whenever that next date is, because there's all this other information that you could gather later. I think there's plenty for you to chew on, so to speak, in front of you right now.
Well, do you think there's any merit to the suggestion that it be carried?
If there's a way to arrange that. On the other hand, maybe the next available date is until after the election. I don't know. But, you know, it's early September now. You know, and I don't know what the schedule looks like for the council and how we would set up a study session or a workshop.
Well, we're overworked, that's for sure.
But I wouldn't necessarily defer it because you're going to have a new council. I think there's more than adequate opportunity for them to come to the workshop and be involved in it and have the same information in front of them that the current council has.
Thank you.
All right, great. Now, I'm going to let only two of you guys talk, and that's it, okay? Don? And Art, and that's it.
Don Day, 101 Park Place. I would just like to say that we're looking for funding sources. Most consultants presuppose that their report is accurate, correct, and the way to go. Some of us tend to think that there are other opinions that need to be considered, and I would strongly suggest that that is the reason that Rick is pushing for what he's pushing for, and I would support what he's pushing for, because there are members of this community that take exception to some of the things that have been put forth, or at least would like to present our side of the picture. Not to say that the consultant is necessarily wrong, but we have differing opinions, and we would like to present our side of it. And it's very difficult in 3 minutes when the other side gets an almost unlimited presentation time. And the meeting would be, I think you've seen us in action, and I think the meeting would be beneficial for the benefit of the community. Thank you.
That's why a workshop is a good thing to do.
Mr. Mayor Art Anthony, I just have one suggestion. If you are going to have a workshop, whatever, for this, and I think it's a good idea, and I think it's a good idea that all the council candidates be invited specifically to it in case they miss it somehow, because it is important that those who may be sitting where you are now have a good, solid background in this agenda item 6A and B. Mm-hmm. 6A, for those who do not have access to this thing, was a discussion of the current status with background of our general fund. B was what is called revenue options. Well, one person's revenue options is another person's tax increase. So I think we ought to make that clear at the beginning. I think you should have enough copies of this little 32-page section run so that people can come in here and get them and take them home and read them without having to pay $2.50 for them or snap, take them off the web. I think it would be a good idea to let everybody in this city who wants to read, and it's not that tough reading. In fact, it's a very good report, I think, and I've read a lot of these things like all of you have. Very good backgrounding in what the city does and what it has. The people of the city deserve to know where we are. Thank you.
Thank you. Before we get rid of this thing, I'll have to repeat that we've been waiting 4 years for this report to actually come before us, and so it's finally here. All right. So we are going to put it off for a
workshop session.
I'm not sure that I'm ready to set a date on that, but future date. You can call us so that we can all get together on that. All right.
Okay, good.
Okay. Let's finish item 6D then. Anyone that wishes to talk about item 6D? This is the elimination of the term limits for the Planning Commission. Okay. Pull it back to the council. Any discussion?
No, I think
motion?
We ought to have a motion from this young lady right here.
She's the one that brought it up?
She brought it up.
That's right.
Oh, well, okay. Then I moved away the first reading and introduce by title only and not and do away with eliminate section 2.202.030.
I'll second that.
All those in favor?
Wait, I think the city attorney needs to say something.
Just so I'm clear, you added to the end of it that we eliminate a section. The ordinance actually only eliminates a subsection of it, and I wouldn't want the implication that we delete the entire section.
Right.
Okay.
Section B.
Okay. Thank you.
Babe. And I'll amend my second.
All right.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Passes 5-0. Thank you.
All right. 6E.
Mr. Mayor and Council, 6E is a consideration of a resolution transferring funds to authorize the city, to authorize myself to sign a contract for litter cleanup, which is on the on-ramps and off-ramps within the city limits to Highway 101. It also authorizes me to negotiate with a cleanup company that would provide services to the city when we have special events in the city. Currently, as you're aware, our public works folks do the cleanup during these special events that are held on the city streets. And this would authorize us to enter into negotiations and try to save the city some money instead of paying overtime to our city employees for this kind of cleanup work. The major portion of it is to for 6 months to try out with this company that we've identified to hire them to police up and clean up the off-ramps and on-ramps to Highway 101 so we can get rid of all the garbage that continues to accumulate. As you're aware from previous discussions, Caltrans, we continually ping on Caltrans to get out there and pick this stuff up, both on 101 and on the on-ramps and off-ramps, and their standard answer is they don't have the money, they don't have the budget, they won't do it. And it's becoming a horrible eyesore to our city. which, of course, we depend a lot on tourism for, and for that matter, just a matter of pride for our local residents. As you drive off 101, you, on these ramps, they're full of garbage now. So that's what it's all about.
Okay. Anyone on the council have any questions?
Well, just a couple of little things first. Number one, there is no initial fee that I can see here anyway to go in and clean it up to its best condition, and then there's a maintenance fee of $575 a month.
That's correct.
Okay. California Men's Colony is not an option.
It may be. I mentioned to another council member, I could enter into good negotiations and see if California Men's Colony or some other prison labor would be available to do this. It goes all over our parks and our other common areas here. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'd like to ask Mr. Rogers here, Rocky Rogers, to talk to us about their work program for Achievement House.
Mr. Mayor and Council, the Achievement House right now, we do have them every once in a while pull off of they normally do, which is downtown cleanup, and they come and police up such as down Maddie Road here and other parts of the town, 4th Street, those areas. But to have them to pull off and to do as many on and off ramps as we've got in Pismo Beach would certainly take away from downtown cleanup. And even during the winter months, and plus we put them in a little more jeopardy, the liability. I don't know that Achievement House would want to take on that kind of liability. This company that the city manager would be entering in negotiations with is called California Highway Adoption Company. They are reputable. They have units that not only you. Work within the state of California, but they also work within the states of Arizona, Oregon, and Nevada, and do cleanup. And it's their signs, pretty much, that you see on the highway. They do cleanup. People hire them. Individuals hire them to clean up, and they get their names stuck on the plaque out there.
And how often would they clean the off-ramps?
Once a month, I believe.
Once a month they would clean all of the Pismo Beach off-ramps.
On ramps,
those within ramps, the city both. Limits, yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, the price isn't really, all that bad, but it seems nonsensical to me, anyway, to clean the off-ramps and not do something with the center divider out there in the freeway. I mean, that is really an atrocity, is that center divider.
But Caltrans doesn't let us go to the center divider, so that's a problem.
That's right. And Caltrans does not even allow this company to go to center dividers.
Oh, they don't.
Only Caltrans employees.
Yeah. And we've asked. I've had Rocky innumerable times. I call Rocky and tell him that we need to get something done, and he's called Caltrans. But bottom line is, the standard answer is, we don't have the budget, we don't have the folks, we won't do it.
And you can't.
On 101 in the center divider, that's absolutely right. They will not let us go in there. They will not let other organizations, companies, whatever, go in the center divider 101. And so, I mean, this is obviously not a unique problem to Pismo Beach. I mean, if you drive up 101 up towards San Jose, if you get up in the San Jose area, I mean, it's literally become 101 up there and 880 and all those highways. They're just garbage dumps.
Well, and they're absolutely terrible. Well, with your connections, you would think that we would be able to use what's that little fort place above Paso Robles up there?
Fort Hunter Liggett. Or Camp Roberts.
Get those guys.
Get the Army out there.
Get the Army out there.
Come on, let's get reasonable.
Well, the last time I looked, Council Member Rabinault, the Army and those units up there at Camp Roberts and Hunter Liggett are in preparation. They're doing mobilization training, deploying to Iraq and Afghanistan. So they're not in the business.
It wouldn't be a good
they're not
mix.
In the business of picking up trash.
Yeah.
Well, no, I know what I was thinking, though. Seriously, I was thinking about their trucks. Because they could run a scoop or something down through there, but that's probably not a good idea.
Well, this is
authorize the city manager to negotiate and enter into a contract for 6 months with California Highway Adoption Company for trash mitigation on freeway ramps and one special event.
I'll second that. All that.
And one special event being the car show?
We'll make a decision.
It could be any shoulder, anything. Okay, those, so we have a motion and a second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Passes 5-0.
All right, now we go to the consent agenda. All right. We've pulled 6G,
4G.
4G, 4H, 4I, and 4J.
All right. We did?
Yes, we did.
I will move for the balance to approve the balance of the consent agenda. If there's anything left.
We got A, B, C, D, E, F.
If someone will second it, I'll second it then.
Oh, I second it. I'm sorry.
Mayor Pro Tem Reese?
Yes.
Councilmember Gonzalez G?
Yes.
Councilmember Rabinault?
Yes.
Councilmember Natoli?
Yes.
Mayor Crescioni?
Yes.
Passes 5-0.
Okay. Item 4G. Mr. City Manager, could you...
Well, item 4G is a notice of completion. This is standard for when we complete all kinds of engineering projects here in capital improvements within the city. The downtown project is complete, and it's appropriate at this time to issue a notice of completion.
It's getting late, huh?
Mr. Ray, do you have anything to add?
Who pulled that?
Tony.
No.
Oh, Tony pulled it? Okay, he's gone.
The mayor pulled it.
Actually, I was the one that pulled it, but I thought that I had some letters here. Oh, there they are. Thank you. I wanted to have Don Day and Rick Turton, but Rick decided to go home, come before the podium up there because I think that these two need some attaboy. Come on, Don.
I just want to know, is that one street light working now? No. There's one street light that wasn't working? Is it working now?
We have a bulb burn.
I wanted to be sure that you had something to show your children and anyone that
cares
right, what you did. And in fact, this man and Rick Turton, unfortunately, is not around. His efforts actually gave us 31,000 square feet of stamped sidewalks, 4,000 linear feet of new curbs and gutters. They installed 27 new attractive light standards. They created...
It's been a real pleasure doing this work. It was a labor that, for myself, I really enjoyed doing. It was an opportunity to give something back to a community that has been exceptionally good to me and to my family. And not often do we get to give something back in a way in which we're capable of doing it. So... and I know I've had to apologize to a lot of people for pushing very hard, but as a consequence of that, we got something done very quickly, and I think we did an awful lot with a lot of obstacles put in our way. We mentioned one of them, Caltrans, which was very difficult to deal with, but in spite of all of that, I think we've got something that we can all be very proud of, and especially the council, because you gave us the opportunity by giving us the funds and the wherewithal to do that and the support to do it when we needed assistance in the field. And also staff who supported us, Greg Gray especially, when we needed help. And then the crews in town, those people stepped up, especially during the bathroom facilities work and the wrapping up of the sidewalks and the streets, the trees and stuff. The city crews really jumped into it and wholeheartedly supported this. And without their efforts, this would never have gotten done as quickly or as well as it was. So I think they need to be commended as well. And thank you very much for this.
Thank you, Don, very much.
And by the way, I also sent letters of commendations to all of the individuals that were also involved with this project. It's something that was desperately needed. Thank you all.
Good. Thank you, Joe.
So I'll make a motion that we accept item 4G.
I'll second that.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Passes 5-0. Thank you.
Okay. Item 4H.
Mr. Mayor and Council, item 4H is the award of the purchase of a new Ford Expedition four-wheel drive vehicle. This is for the police department. This is in the budget, is in our equipment replacement budget. It will replace the current Ford Expedition four-wheel drive that the police department has had. That vehicle will then be rotated down. Actually, it's going to go down to the Public Works Department, down to Rocky, and will become Rocky's vehicle. And the current vehicle that Rocky's driving, which is even older and has more mileage, will then be sold, and we'll get rid of it. So it's not, we don't, when we rotate these out, we don't lose them immediately. They just go down and replace an even older vehicle. That's our intent, and that's what we've been acting on recently. This vehicle, if you approve it for purchase, it will take actually about 3 or 4 months to bring it on board to get it fitted out with the proper equipment that the police department requires in it, so it won't be on our streets, you know, the week after next. It's going to take a little while to get it here. Rocky, do you have anything you'd like to add?
Other than the fact that the vehicle currently has roughly 75,000 miles on it, it's going to be, like city manager said, around 3 months before it'll actually be on the streets, fully functional, therefore accumulating even more miles.
And with a bid of $28,075, and that was the low bid. Malay Ford came in with a bid of $28,207, slightly more. This is an approved budget purchase. It's in the budget that you all have already approved, so it's not something outside of that.
Okay. Any questions from council?
Well, I guess my only question is that we don't have any cars anymore, because what happens is we keep buying four-wheel drive trucks or SUVs or this stuff, and then as they get stepped down, we've kind of eliminated cars. And it just seems that, I don't know. I mean, do you see where I'm going with that? And the reason that I'm going there is because I don't believe that government has taken the lead as it comes to some of these hybrids out there. And I know that we can't use a hybrid for a police car. Obviously, I know that. But I'm hoping that new vehicle purchases, government would set the lead so that, you know, the consumers would get the deal that we need to be less reliant upon fossil fuel.
I'll let Rocky also add to this, but I think I understand your perception.
Mm-hmm.
But this is we're not adding an additional four-wheel drive vehicle.
Right.
This is only replacing one that's already there,
right.
And they only have one. And in fact, we do have lots of cars. I know sometimes the SUVs stick out more.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think
okay,
we're not adding additional four-wheel drive vehicles.
Okay, Rocky.
Currently, it's somewhat cost prohibitive to purchase vehicles such as some of the hybrids, especially for if we were using them for public works use. Mm-hmm. Public works needs trucks pretty much in order to function and work. The automobiles, we will continue to have automobiles here at City Hall. Those vehicles we hope to someday, and we are looking at alternative fuel vehicles in the future, but someday to replace those with such in order to meet those concerns.
Okay. I'm going to open it up to the public.
Don Day, 101 Park Place, Pismo Beach. I'm the culprit that asked both of these to be pulled after such a nice presentation. I feel a little guilty, but...
you should be.
And Rocky and I had a long discussion earlier on, and he answered most of my questions. My biggest concern primarily was, are we adding to the pool of cars and increasing the number of cars, or are we just replacing one for one like kind? And he assured me we're not growing the pool, because I've had some concerns that perhaps as more cars become available, more people have a car to drive, when maybe we should be looking at that closely. And Rocky assured me that's not the case. So I would pull my objection or my request on both 4-H and 4-I because these are car for car like kind. So assuming that what I was told is correct, I have no reservations. Thank you.
All right. Anyone else? Close. Bring it back to council.
I'll move for approval of 4-H and 4-I.
I second it.
Just under discussion, I thought your comment was really a good one because I've been the rep on the Air Pollution Control District forever, and that's one of the things they keep talking about. And there are some grants available from them. So,
well, actually, if you recall, we do have a little electric car for the police department.
Yeah, we do.
So we, we're getting there. And we have bicycles. That's right. So we're doing our job.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have a motion. And do we have a second? Okay.
Councilmember Rabinow?
Yes.
Councilmember Gonzalez-G?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Reese?
Yes.
Councilmember Natoli?
Yes.
Mayor Crescioni?
Yes.
Passes 5-0. Thank you.
Okay, item 4J.
Mr. Mayor, jumping up there and doing their things on our benches. By buying 10 of them at once, we're getting as outlined in the staff report, we're getting a special deal on the price, a discounted price. We would then also make these benches available to the public at large, as we've done in the past, if they wanted to come in and purchase a bench with a plaque and dedicate it to in memory of a loved one. That would also be available for them to do that later on. We probably anticipate that a number of people will come forward and do that because of the prime location those benches are going to be in down there in the plaza.
So, but you've got spaces for all 10 of them. We're buying 10 to put 10
correct.
In.
Correct. Okay. That's right. Correct. And they will be by the 5 palm trees down there facing out, but with their backs up against the palm trees. Mm-hmm. So this is we're requesting here an authorization to go ahead and purchase these 10 benches, and the lead time on the order, they actually won't arrive here for about 12 more weeks.
Okay, any questions?
Nope.
Well, I was just going to ask why we were taking out of the water fund. I guess he explained that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, open it to the public. Someone did ask that question.
Hi, Shelley Higginbotham, Parks Commission. The reason why I asked this to be pulled is I was hoping that the money that we get for the Adopt a Bench program could be put into a special fund for benches and not just thrown back into the general fund. When I was here talking to you about the TEAM program, you had suggested that we try to put things under parks and recreation budget, and I think this would be a really good item.
But we're borrowing this money.
But you're going to be getting money back. You're borrowing it from one fund, and you're going to put it back in the general fund.
Yeah, but we have to pay it back.
Well, that was my question, because this is an enterprise fund. Yeah. And I thought you had to pay it back, but...
Okay. I was wondering why it was going back into the general fund.
But it isn't. This money, those benches were destroyed because we had to put in that water line. And right. So consequently, we are only replacing the benches that were destroyed with this money. So it's not a loan. It's nothing. It's part of the water fund that is able to pay for these outright because of the destruction of the other benches. That's all that it is. So we never have to pay this back. But there will be additional revenues coming in from people that want to purchase a plaque.
That's what she's saying.
Yeah, and that's what she's saying. You're saying going to deposit it into the general fund. Yeah.
Exactly.
Right. It states like here in the staff report. You're correct.
Right. Yes, you're absolutely right. But we don't have to pay this money back is the point that I was trying. This isn't a loan. This isn't anything.
But well, may I suggest that type of – it's a good point that you're making, but that needs to be done at the time that we're talking about how the budget is going to be all divvied up. And that's probably something to think about how to make it happen at that time.
I hear what she's saying. She's saying let it go back into a fund to replenish benches in other parts of town. Yeah. Just have it like a revolving...
Right, or a separate fund set up. You don't have to put maybe under Parks and Rec, but a separate budget item.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great idea.
See, because what I'm thinking about that is I would...
Fitting it in a similar way that if the if a street is torn up in order to put a water line underneath it, the water fund repaves the street.
Right.
And so if somebody wants to buy the street, donate some money.
Well, I guess my question was, is when we do this in other areas, adopt a bench, where do the funds go? And I guess they all always go into the general fund. They don't usually go into recreation. That was my question.
I'm not aware that they do, but I've not looked at that, and I can and can get back to you if you'd like.
As far as I'm aware, too, they go into the general fund when you know when Mr. Smith purchases the bench with a little plaque. That money then goes into the general fund. But then, of course, later on in the budget process, the council, you all decide how much you're going to authorize to the parks. But here the plan would be is we purchase the 10 benches, and then we make them available to the public. And what we're proposing is as they are purchased, that money that would come in would go into the city's general fund, and the general fund can certainly use the money.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Which was actually part of.
All right. Let me open it to the public, so because there's obviously some questions. Okay, go ahead. And I had opened it, didn't I?
Yeah.
I need another one of these.
It's getting to that point. Yeah.
Merrily Hyman. The Adopt-A-Bench program operated by the city. I'm aware of some of the rules you had because we were originally going to do the Adopt-A-Bench program for dinosaur caves through the city. And as it was explained to me by Carolyn Johnson and other members of planning in the parks, the city can't make money on items. So the charge for the Adopt-A-Bench program for the city was to be exactly equal to the cost of the purchase of the bench and the installation so that it balanced out.
Right.
In this instance, you are using a fund to replace the benches because they were destroyed in the process. But that gives an opportunity for the Recreation Department, Parks, to ask people for a donation to get their plaque on one of those benches, rather than say it's an exchange for the cost of the bench because that's covered. Make it a case of where to get a plaque on the bench, it's a donation to the city of $1,200 or whatever the fee is right now. So it would allow then, rather than going into the general fund, it to be earmarked for a program for Parks and Rec. It's just a way to get them some funds rather than use this for a trash basket or something downtown or rec or some of those programs. So it's a donation to the city.
That's what Shelley was thinking. Mm-hmm.
So you would actually have the individual earmarked or checked to...
However you decide, they decide to set that up, but a donation to the city. There are people who have donated.
At the time, there wasn't a bench picked, and so they had to go on hold, and their purchase was put on abeyance until something would come up from the city. The only thing I would caution is that the money that these people see, they're going to want to see it go to their area of concern, which is I suspect that's what would happen. If they buy a plaque and it goes on a bench, then they get the recognition of that. That's what they wanted. What I was told is what they wanted to do was to put it down into the pier area, down into the plaza, or on the sidewalk somewhere. They're more than willing to do that as well. Mm-hmm. They just needed a mechanism to do it, mm-hmm. and I think this is what we've come up with.
Yeah, I don't think this is the right mechanism for that. I think there are plenty of residents in the area that would take those benches in a heartbeat. We've had a list. I know that there's been a list of people that have been wanting to do it. I would rather come up with a project down in that core that these people want to devote that money to. Parks and Rec needs to be funded.
The problem is that somebody needs to do something, because I don't know how long they're going to sit here and wait, because we don't have any benches out there to speak of, and we've been waiting a long time. And the reason we jumped on this, as I understand it, was to go forward and do something and get the 10 benches in there, and it came out of an account that had money in it.
No, the benches aren't going to be purchased. It's just now this idea of how do we get money back and where is that money going to go?
Right.
That's really.
But you have some people willing to do it. Right now, they're not sure what to do with it or who to give it.
Well, you have not nearly served this community enough, so that can be your next project.
The little short Portuguese person that I'm married to, you tell her that.
Okay. I wonder if staff can come back. Obviously, we don't have to make a decision on money coming back to us. But if staff can come up with a way that
to earmark it,
to earmark it so that it could be done at another meeting.
Well, I think we can do that. That I don't believe that's any problem. Correct me if I'm wrong, there, Mr. Eads. But all we're asking for here is authorization to go purchase the 10 benches and take advantage of this discount. Right. Now, when individuals come forward and buy a bench at the set price along with a bronze plaque, we can certainly dedicate those monies to the park fund if that's the council's wishes. That's no problem. We will earmark those, and that money then would go into the park fund. We can do that.
Or just set it aside in the general fund for the next budget session or whatever.
Well, we could just designate it tonight with our motion. Let's just do it. Get it over with.
Okay. No, who made the motion?
Marianne.
You made a motion? What did you say?
Well, I moved that we authorize the purchase of 10 benches for the Pier Plaza area at the cost of $10,498 to be funded out of the Pomeroy Waterline Project account. And then when people actually dedicate those benches, that funding go back into Parks and Recreation.
That's what I seconded.
Okay.
Mayor Pro Tem Reese?
Yes.
Councilmember Ravenal?
Yes.
Councilmember Gonzalez G?
Yes.
Councilmember Natoli?
Yes.
Mayor Crescioni?
Yes.
Passes 5-0.
Okay, we've gone through.
I implore the public to slow down on the residential streets in our area. The parking situations are bad. Children dart out from in between those cars. And I don't want a fatality or a major injury to happen anywhere within this community. So please slow down. The second thing that I'd like to say is that does anybody remember the lady's name that owns the apartment building right across from Shell Beach Elementary School? I want to contact her. She pledged to the council that she would extend the sidewalk into her property. Remember when you and I were on the corner up there?
The dentist's wife. Dr. Yeah.
Huh?
Elwood.
It was Elwood?
Marjorie Elwood.
Oh, is that who that is? Okay. Yes. Then I will contact her to see if she can do it, because what a problem it is at that corner. I walk Ian to school now every morning and pick him up, and my gosh, if you get two or three families in a row there, they're out in the street, out on Shell Beach Road. It is terrible, and it has to stop. It has to stop. Thank you.
Okay. Arlene.
I had two things, Mr. Mayor. One was I'm sure it'll be in the paper, but I wanted to let everyone know that the workshop for the Hine Street on-ramp and the Price Street extension is now October 21st at 7 p.m., at the Vets Hall on Bellow Street, October 21st. And then got lots of calls, and I heard that the rest of the council got calls on this as well, on the infected birds. There were so many people that called about our ponds that had stagnant water and what's being done about that. Does anyone answer that question?
I can take a stab at that. Several months ago, the county's Office of Environmental Services came out and briefed me on their plans for mosquito abatement, I presume is what you're talking about. And And they've implemented that. And in fact, I've talked to them twice since then to make sure that they are implementing this mosquito abatement program, and they say they are. I've not talked to them now for about a month, but last time I checked, they were. What they're doing is feeding a naturally occurring bacteria to the putting this in the ponds, and it destroys the digestive systems of the larva and the mosquitoes. And this is a naturally occurring bacteria because of the concern of environmentalists. And so they are doing that.
Okay, if we could follow up and make sure that they are. And then anyone, I guess, that residents that have bird baths that have stagnant water, if they'll look into that as well. So that's all I have, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Marianne?
Remember a while back I talked about the transit district wanting to add two routes, and I asked for funding. As it turned out, we used their reserve funding for this, so none of it's coming out of our budget at all. But I'm pleased to announce that the two...
Our meeting to SLOCOG was postponed. We didn't have one this past... For this month. So that's postponed for next month. I did go to the Water Resources Advisory Committee, and we discussed the incorporation of three areas for City of Paso Robles. So they're talking about bringing in three general areas, and it's going to be all for new homes to be developed.
Really?
And,
how big?
I don't have those figures with me here tonight, but they're considerable size. In fact, two of them are already being developed now. They're bringing a third one in. Mm-hmm. And, of course, they have the water issue that's coming up just with like we have. And I got to talk to some of the LAFCO people that were there. And the question was asked, do you... When these people come in to present you the incorporation of these three areas, how do you determine if they have the right amount of water to service their areas? And the LAFCO man says, you have to have licensed geologists such as Cleet. Is that their name?
Cleet.
He was there, by the way. And he said, if that engineer... tells us that there is sufficient water on that property, we approve it. So we're not going to have to go through any kind of plans. So that caught my ear when I heard that. Hmm. So evidently, Cleet's one of the top in the area as far as geologists goes. And they take his word for it. That's all I have, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, great. I have.
Mayor, I'll move that we extend the meeting 3 minutes.
Second.
I really only need one, but go ahead.
11 o'clock.
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, great. In my 1 minute here, really, I wanted to talk about the fact that we have had an awful lot of people that have made some. Very interesting comments about Caltrans wanting to close Heinz, and of course it's thanks to Arlene here that this issue has been revived, because if it hadn't been that she started asking the real heavy questions, we would have been railroaded into something that would be really, really damaging to the city, the downtown core especially. So that has been taking an awful lot of my time, believe it or not, answering questions about that. Mm. So that's all I have. City Attorney report.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
All right. And do we have any committee reports from council members? Rudy?
Yes, I just did.
Good.
I just gave you one.
Mine was related to that, too.
Wonderful.
I have nothing, Mr. Mayor.
All right, Bill? No. All right, great. I'm going to close this meeting. Thank you very much.
Well, started
every 10 minutes.
10 minutes
was a buzzer.
It's supposed to be about every 30.
Either one way or the other. And I mean, everybody that fronts on James Way,
It's a trial anyway.
Yeah,
no
the problem.
And it's more frequently than 30 minutes.
Every 10 minutes. I timed it, yeah. Every 10 minutes, you've got one going one direction or the other.
And here I thought it was such a great thing.
Well,
but good things come bad.
That's right.